Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, we've reached the end of the week. It is Friday. It's the end of the broadcast week for me. No day off tomorrow, no day off Sunday. And we'll be back at it on Monday. Tuesday's a travel day. Don't know if I'll be in the chair Tuesday night, but by golly, if it is at all humanly possible, you know I will be. By this time Tuesday, I'll be in Washington, D.C. at the Green Jobs Conference. Guy James will be joining me. And I'll be looking forward to hopefully hearing from you. Been doing some engineering work with John Fox. And it's looking like we may have a groovy new remote rig all ready to go. Early thank yous to everybody who helped out with Ben Birch last night. I told you he needed to raise $300 to pay for the shortfall for this month's Horn server fees. You came through. Proud of you. Thank you. Several of you came through. I checked with Ben shortly before the show, and he said he had the $300 he needed. You understand what this is all about. And, you know, there's a certain irony to the fact that we managed to raise $300 last night to keep the white rose blooming, as it were. I had to make a little road trip up an increasingly slickifying road. It's snowing here in the mountains of almost level West Virginia. And on the way back, I tuned in because I keep it there. I tuned in. I turned it on. I keep my radio tuned to NPR. Just see if I'm missing any news as I head up the road. And I heard one of their interminable sales pitches. I'm sorry, donor pitches, in which the guy who hosts All Things Considered, the evening news program, made a stunning confession. It costs, get this, you're going to fall out of your chairs when you realize what a bargain the Horn is. Oh, my God. Everybody associated with the infrastructure of the Horn, which means all of us, you who share your time, we who crawl behind the mics, those who keep the blogs and the News Ninja-ing and the forums and the website going, and those of you who contribute to keep us going, you're going to fall out. Get the buckle. Please buckle your safety belt until I have turned off the buckle your safety belt sign, okay? I could not believe this. You know what? Because I almost ran off the slick road. I mean, this is a hell of a confession to make. It costs NPR, and this is why they have to hustle so hard with the corporations and the donors and the yada, yada, yada. It costs $20,000 per day for NPR to produce 2 hours of radio. $20,000 a day. Man, there's some lobster lunches built into that stuff. I mean, there's some 10 a.m. cocktail hours there. And that's not by way of criticism. I enjoy listening to All Things Considered. But that's what you get when you are working within the old, worn-out, outmoded paradigm of the terrestrial buggy whip media. $20,000 a day for 2 hours of radio. Do you realize that we produce something on the order of 15 to 20, depending on when it was, hours of radio per week, 52 weeks a year, informative, and not just informative, but interactive? Tell me the last time you were able to call and talk about a news story to NPR. But we produce, where they, $20,000 a day to produce 2 hours of a radio news program, and that's just all things considered, okay? Let's be clear about that. $20,000 a day. Whereas we produced 15 hours per week, 52 weeks a year, for less than $20,000 for the whole year? And compare the quality. Oh, no, I don't have the Washington access of NPR. I also don't have the self-imposed the prefrontal censorship that comes with that access. $20,000 a year versus $20,000 a day. You do the math, you tell me which one's the bigger bargain. I mean, do you actually have to hear Dick Cheney on the air sounding like a vicious blood-sucking monster in order to understand that Dick Cheney is a vicious blood-sucking monster, or will a recording do? Which is more important, the input and the conversation, or the terrestrial over-the-air buggy whip technology? Man, it takes a lot of coal-fired electricity to push out that to push out all those radio waves. But just, it blows my mind. So I want to thank you. I want to make sure that I thank you. I want to thank you for making sure that Ben could make up his $300 shortfall last night and into today. It makes me proud to know that you're willing to step up the way you are. And to be honest, Ben has that shortfall because the guys at Air America decided that they wanted the widow's mite that Ben was getting via contributions for running Tom Hartman's stream, so they pulled the rights to it. AAR did. Because they want it all. See, Air America wants it. Air America is not like the Horn. The Horn operates on the modern paradigm of the open source. There's nobody on the Horn that objects if, for instance, you go to the archives, burn a disc, and give it to somebody. There's nobody on the Horn that objects if you turn a show around and hang it up on your site for listeners to hear. It's open sourced. On the other hand, Air America wants to control every last little packet of audio that comes from them because they want to own the liberal radio movement. How many times have you heard me say, I don't want less liberal radio, I want more? I wouldn't object if Air America's programming was beaming into some local AM that I could pick up here. I, by God, would listen to it when I had an opportunity. Because I want more, not less, liberal argument, liberal persuasion on the air and on the Internet. There are other liberal talkers on the air the same time as me. Am I jealous of them? Hell no! I want them to thrive. I want them to prosper. Air America, on the other hand, wants to clamp them down and eliminate them unless they can control them. And hence, Ben got in a bind. But you helped Ben out. You're committed to making sure that this continues. And it's the end of January. Tomorrow is the last day of January. Rather a special day for me. But we haven't gotten anywhere near. Nowhere near. Not even $1,000 near the $2,000 we try to raise every month through listener contributions. Nope. But we will soldier on. Because you know what? I'm convinced. I am utterly convinced that I can do for $20,000 a year more that we can do at the Horn for $20,000 a year, although it would be nice to have $100,000 a year so people could get paid, so people could buy their medicine, so people could, you know, do the things that people need to do to avoid desperation, degradation, and yes, death. It would be nice. But I take a certain sardonic pride in being able to do for a whole year at the Horn what NPR goes through in one day. You tell me who is a better steward of your contribution dollars. 20 grand in a day or 20 in a year? Which one of us is squeezing a nickel until you can hear Jefferson screaming all the way from Monticello? I think we both know the answer. So I wanted to thank you. And to remind you that February is upon us. Short month. Good in one way, bad another. Kind of likely that we won't be meeting that goal either. Because there's less days to meet it in. But there were 31 in this one and didn't happen either. But we will keep going. Now, you know, I'll go to the phones here in just a moment. It is Friday, and I try to start the conversation quickly. But, you know, right before every program, I run by and I check a couple of for-profit media sites. You know, these people that get 20,000 in a day. There's for-profit media that goes through 10 million in a day. So I wandered over to CNN.com, and I see this headline. RNC elects its first African-American leader. And I'm sorry. See, I'm still giggling. for a minute, I had to check. I thought I was at the Onion. But no, they've elected. And then I had to check. And yeah, by golly, I had a press release from none other than DNC Chairman Tim Kaine on the very same topic, so apparently it's real, which kind of blew my mind. The statement is as follows. My congratulations to Michael Steele on his election as chairman of the Republican National Committee. Together, we have the honor of leading our respective parties during one of the most important periods in our country's history. I look forward to working with Chairman Steele as we set out to put partisanship and the politics of the past aside to get our economy working again. The American people have sent a clear message that the challenges we face are too great for us to get bogged down by outmoded ideological divides. They have challenged us to work together to find practical solutions that will put this country back on the right track. President Obama and the Democratic Party are answering that challenge. And I hope Chairman Steele will join us. Sing it with Guadalcanal Diary. Sing it with Governor Kane. So let's do hope that new RNC chairman Michael Steele decides to work with the Democratic National Committee to make a better America, which ain't gonna happen. There'll be a hard freeze. Be a hard freeze on the equator when that happens. There'll be palm trees on the Arctic Circle when that happens. Well, wait a minute. Then again, you know, you leave the Republicans to their devices, and there might wind up being palm trees on the Arctic Circle if there's any earth left to grow. Might not work. But you get the idea. I hope that wasn't put out by the DNC with any sense that... Michael Steele. I mean, because that's just that is the most cynical of moves. Godzilla from Wasilla on the ticket as a sort of an anti-Hillary, you know, draw the Pumas away kind of weird and didn't work. Well, that's what this is. Oh, well, we got a black president. I guess we're going to have a black chairman of the RNC. Damn. All imperfectly qualified white men out there. What's the world coming to? But that's it. I mean, it, you. And so I was checking the headlines, speaking of which, and I saw Alaska volcano appears ready to blow. I thought the Bristol Palin had her chupacabra a couple of months ago. Was I wrong? I mean, wasn't that trip Keyshawn Flapjack Johnston or something? Never mind. That was really cheap and tawdry on my part. Let's go to the phones. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Huffington Post, in regards to the Steele election, by the way, they almost ended up with a guy from, I think it was South Carolina, who I swear to God had a sheet hanging in his closet. You know, he had that look.
Yeah.
But Huffington Post, they showed the picture of Steele, and then below it, they had a picture of one of Steele's signs from his gubernatorial race, where it said, Steele, Democrat.
Huh? I'm sorry. Yeah. What?
In the 2004 election, he was putting out signs that said that had his name in great big letters, and then down below in little letters, Democrat.
Well, then I guess we've got a little idea.
We've got
an idea of what we can expect.
So you know what this is going to be like. Oh God, yeah, just no. Anyway, the reason I'm calling in is in case anybody hasn't heard about it. Claire McCaskill has come up with an idea. Actually, Claire McCaskill lost her temper. you ought to go up to her website at the ussenate.gov website, you know, where her page is, and see the the film of her speech when she was introducing this bill. I mean, she came right out and called them idiots, these CEOs. And her whole thing is that if one of these Wall Street companies, banks, is accepting TARP money,
mm-hmm.
according to this bill, they can't have a salary, and that includes bonuses or anything else, that is higher than the salary made by the President of the United States.
Ooh. Didn't see that. That's kind of sweet. And, you know, you don't exactly, you're not exactly living on the beans and rice on that either, right?
Yeah, 400 grand, to me, that would be hog heaven. We're living on less than 15,000 a year. Try it. It's fun. So I urge everyone, pick up their little phones tomorrow and give their senators a call, and then give...
Or maybe try it Monday.
Haskell's. Or Monday, that's what I meant. And then give Senator McCaskill's office a call and tell them, hey, you're from such and such a state, you've been on your delegation, and you're going to keep after them. Keep at it.
Precisely.
Because I think it's great.
I think it is, too. You know, you like to see him doing the right thing.
Oh, yeah, I just love that. I was like, whoopee, whoopee, whoopee. they showed the film per speech on MSNBC, and I'm sitting up, I'm cheering, you know. You would have thought, you know, the my team had won the Super Bowl, you know, and everything like that. And
that's okay. My team's about to win the Super Bowl.
Well, my team won't because I'm the, well, look where I come from. Come on.
Yeah, I know. You're a Seahawks fan. You can't help it.
I have one other question.
Okay.
And this, I'm sure this really seems petty, but is it just me, or does Mitch McChinless look like he's wearing lipstick all the time?
Well, I think it's embalmer's putty, personally. I mean,
he honest to God, looks like he borrowed Condi Rice's lipstick, and he's wearing it.
Every time I look at him, I can't get that far into detail, Susan, because my stomach starts churning. You know, I'm all bass ackwards insides anyway. I look at him, no chin, and...
You ever notice,
Susan, there are people out there that you can look at them as adults, you know, 60-somethings or whatever, and you know exactly what they look like as children?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I saw Mitch McConnell the other day, and I knew exactly what he looked like as a kid. And you know, he and Newt Gingrich and all those little piggy repiglickins, you know that they just had the tar beat out of them on the playground every day, and they're just taking it back on the rest of the world.
Yeah, they were the fat, ugly kid that everybody hated because they were, first of all, because they were snitches, and secondly, because they were sneaky little snots who would pull all the, you know, they would steal you blind, provided they could figure out a way to do it without getting caught. And let's face it, they just beg to be bullied.
Well, they kind of do, yeah. I mean, I got a hard time working with it just because I know, you know what bullying is all about. But
yeah, I know. But, you know, having lived through it, you know, I was a nerd, so I got bullied. I wasn't a snitch, but I was a nerd, which kind of, well, that's put me said that right there. But, you know, so I can understand the bullying part. If you're in school, if you're different, you're dead.
Right.
And these guys, geez. But I swear to you, I think I fastened on the way he looks as a defense mechanism, because if I'm worrying myself, is that lipstick? Then I don't have to listen to him.
Yeah, sure, exactly. Defense mechanism. You're exactly right.
Sure. And that way I don't have to listen to all the crap he's spouting, and my blood pressure stays where it's supposed to be. And that way, and I don't scream at the television set, which tends to upset my husband because he wants to know what's wrong with me, and I'm yelling back at the television set. But he really looks like he borrowed some of Condi's lipstick. I know it's petty of me. It's really
no, no, no. It's just let me know when you let me know when he gets to the blush and the eyeliner.
Oh God! Oh God!
Then he'll look like some sort of gone to seed 80s new waver.
Oh, please. You just gave me an image that just, oh, I'm going to have to.
Well, two can play at this game, Susan.
Just for that, I'm going to send you a recipe that will make you drool.
As long as it doesn't make me think of Mitch McConnell in lipstick, I'm all right.
Yeah, but you won't be able to eat it. I did want to mention, the gentleman from, Michigan who died.
Yes, Marvin Scherr.
Yeah. I don't know if the law is still in effect in the Pacific Northwest, but the last time I looked, people don't get their heat turned off in winter. I don't care how much they owe.
Well, one of the other power companies there said, "Well, we never do that. We've got a rule from November to March 31st. We don't cut anybody's power off."
Yeah, that's the deal. You don't cut off the heat in the middle of winter when somebody's going to die. In the summertime, that's another matter. But in the winter, when somebody is going to freeze to death, you don't do that. It's not nice.
Yeah, it's deadly. Is that the word I'm after? Deadly?
And it's just, and, you know, I was listening to Dr. Rick when he called in yesterday. Oh, that man is so smart. And I just love him to be.
He is a great soul.
Yeah, and it's true. We have developed a family. Because, okay, you know, my little issue from a few months ago that
yep.
I'm still getting over.
Yes, yeah. Susan, slip, trip, fall, go boom?
No, chair flipped, I go fall, go fall.
Well, I was trying to be gracious about it, Susan. You know.
Hey, I didn't slip, the chair went whoopee. Anyway, the thing is, the first people I thought of telling.
Right.
You and Agnes.
Yep.
And to me, that says, okay, you've been. Congratulations, your family. And it's the same with Dr. Rick and all of them. And John and Peter, for when and if he decides to come back on the air, I don't care. He's still family.
Well, there you go.
Even if he never comes back on the air again, he's still family. And I'm still sending him pixie dust. But, you know, it's... The whole thing with the depression, and my husband did live through the depression, and Dr. Rick was right. The people who were poor to begin with, they had an easier time of it. Because the first thing they did was they went out and they just planted more ground.
Yeah, as long as you can afford the seed.
Yeah. Well, that's why I went and got heritage seeds so that I could gather my own seeds from now on. And that way I don't have to buy them no more.
Right. Year to year.
You ain't the only one who can make a nickel scream. Comes from our shared Scots ancestry.
Lettest thou loose of me! Thou art squeezing me!
I can make a penny squeal like a stuck hog.
Yeah, I can just hear Abraham Lincoln the way I worked that penny over here. 4 score and 7 foot-pounds ago.
Yeah. As the voice goes up about 4 octaves. But, we have to keep, if we get in trouble, if one of us gets in trouble, we have to yell for the others. And people, Bob and Agnes can soldier on, but only to a certain point. And then you got to cough up. I'm a subscriber. If you aren't a subscriber and you're listening to this, why not? And I'm about as close to broke as it's possible to get. Why aren't you subscribing?
Yep, exactly.
Here's my pitch for the day.
Well done.
Give my love to Agnes and the babies and the kids.
Well, I most assuredly will.
And have fun, and I hope your team wins.
Yeah, I do too.
I probably won't even watch.
Oh, no. You'll be, but hey, you're 3 hours behind us here. It probably only comes on at midnight where you are. Wayne's just about to the point where he's, kind of vibrating like he's driving over rough. He's ready for that. He's ready for another Steelers ring, man. And, you might have heard him last night. He said, I think it comes on at midnight here. I think Wayne wants the game played, like 5 minutes from now.
They make it come on. They start it late on the East Coast, so it will come on at a reasonable hour on the West Coast.
Right, because they know everybody will watch on the East Coast, and you gotta give primetime a chance in the. But it's in it's in Tampa, but you want to give the Phoenix market a chance. Yeah, you want to. Right, exactly.
No, Phoenix is not not West Coast time.
No, it's Arizona, and they've got their own vision of the.
They're Arizona time.
And I was always a fan of Tulsa time, but never mind. That's Eric Clapton. So, Susan, have a wonderful weekend.
And just remember, think infrastructure. We need more infrastructure, less tax cuts.
Ain't that the truth? And I've got that on the plate for later this evening.
Tax cuts.
Yeah, exactly.
As far as I'm concerned, dump all of them.
Yeah, and actually make the money work.
Yeah, build stuff like a grid.
There you go. You mean like a green energy grid? I bet I'll hear something about that next week.
Or even just an electrical grid that doesn't get knocked out by a snowstorm. We've got over 1 million people without power, and they're because.
Oh, I was checking on Facebook today, and I saw that our good friend Franken Angel, otherwise known as Ange, who's in Fayetteville, Arkansas, has been whacked for power since the 27th. Nothing more complicated than an ice storm.
Mm-hmm. And this is supposed to be one of the most advanced countries in the world. My fat tush. This doesn't happen in places like Sweden where they get lots of snow. This only happens in places like America where it's controlled by Republicans for over 20 years where they don't give a flying, I won't say it.
No, I know. Well, I tell you what, we've got a busy day ahead of us tomorrow. I think Agnes and I are going down to Charleston for the kickoff of the Sludge Safety Project's legislative efforts. So I'm looking forward to that. And it's just going to be a very, very busy time.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to let you know, my very first call to our very new senator, which we finally got a Democrat in there. Yay!
Goodbye, Gordon. Goodbye.
Yeah. By the way, I left a message on Gordon's. He had one of these answering deals where they took messages instead of had people. And I said, by the way, this message machine is one of the reasons why we voted you out of office. Body.
Yeah.
But anyway, one of the very, very first things I did when I called him the first time, you need to Google go up on Google Images and put in Capered Mountain.
Okay. Good. Very good. And then Coal River Wind, of course.
And then I directed him to ilovemountains.org. And I let him, and then I proceeded to let the poor man know. I had already told him, hey, I hope you got a pen. You're going to need to take notes. And I proceeded to let him know exactly what mountaintop removal does to this country. And I will keep at it, just like I keep at it with Wyden. I try.
I know that you do. I got a sense of that from Ron Wyden last week in D.C. He seems like the genuine article.
He's a cool guy. He's a cool senator, and he really, really cares.
I think he does.
And let me put that. I don't think the coal companies or the mineral companies, I don't think they own him.
Nor do I.
So what we need to do is get him in an airplane over Capered Mountain.
I think there's going to have to be a lot of, I think South Wings is going to be busy here in the fairly near future. There's a lot of people need to see this.
It's South Wings?
Yeah, they're the nonprofit organization that flies people over mountain removal sites.
Okay, I'll make another phone call Monday.
I don't want to speak for him, but I'm pretty confident they'll fly most anybody that needs to see over.
Well, I know.
Shoot,
know.
they'd probably fly Don Blanken's flying over. Now they might do a hard bank to starboard and the door might fly open, but
yeah, we can.
No, now see, that's not fair. They'd be really mad at me if I said that. But I'm just playing.
But you know, if just the fact that they do flyovers, that's all I need to know. Because whether or not you know they're willing to do it for free or not, hey, this is a resource the senator needs to know because he has a budget for stuff like this. So he gets in, goes down there, flies over, takes a look, and then we have one more ally.
There you go. All right. Well, Susan, we will talk soon and give Donald our best.
Okie doke.
All right. Take care.
Do anything I wouldn't do, or at the very least, don't get caught.
And there you go.
Oh, and John, the site looks wonderful.
Yeah, I tell you, there's been a ton of work gone into that. It's pretty as a picture, isn't it?
Yep.
And it's getting better all the time. It's going to have functionalities that thing will do things before you think you want to do them.
Yeah.
Between John and ELO Sue, they've been putting in some serious sweat, and I think Lottie's had a hand in this too.
Yeah, and John says we're about to move Santam back home. Yay!
Yes, we absolutely are. We were talking about that the other night.
Well, I shall let you go to other people and give my love to everybody.
All right, will do. Take care, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon, and we roll on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke, what's up?
I'm back among the living.
Okay.
I had the week long cold, all that good stuff. So
yeah, it sounds like you're still working the last of it out. But you know, at least you're among, as Barney Fife would say, you're among the quick.
Well, I'll be happy. The last couple of days, I sounded like Barry White. You know, it's sound like an FM DJ. You know?
Now, hey.
Yeah, down there, mellow. Yeah. Oh, let's see. Now, am I living in a bizarre world or what? I see these idiots up here on the Capitol, the Republicans crying, we ain't got enough tax cuts. I'm sitting there going, I must have woke up on the wrong earth. Because you lost. You don't get to pick what's in the bill. You know, I love these ones. Well, they didn't let us in. I'm sitting there going, gee, I have a flashback of 2002. And I remember energy bills and stuff that Republicans wouldn't let Democrats in the front door or in the back door when they were in there writing bills. Oh, we can't let them in here. They have no choice in it. We would, remember? So now it happened to them, and all of a sudden they're crying.
Well, you know what kind of blew my mind, Luke?
Hmm.
Peter Godbold sent me the link yesterday. Some remarks from John Kerry, of all people.
Okay.
He said, if they're just going to vote against the bill anyway, why do we even negotiate with these people?
This is true.
And, you know, you just went, John?
John, well, see,
is that you, John?
But only when he's not running for office.
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, I appreciated the sentiment.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's one of those things. It's like, look.
I mean,
and like I say, tax cuts are what's got us into this. I mean, for the last 8 years, that's all they pushed is tax cuts, tax cuts. It's like, I'm sorry. They're wanting to give everybody on their side a tax cut. I'm sitting there going, no. I'm sorry. It's at the point, tax cut, you know what? Amazingly enough, we actually have to pay some bills. Guess what those are called? Taxes.
The idea of roads, bridges, frivolities.
I know. Oh, God. You know, it's one of those things. And, you know, one thing that I hope the commentators will shut up about is about Obama taking on Limbaugh. You know what? That's the smartest thing he's done this week, in my opinion, is making Rush Limbaugh the face of the GOP.
And then quietly remind people that the face of the GOP is a junkie.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, we think of Limbaugh as a powerful person in the GOP, yes. But in the public, Limbaugh, a lot of people have no clue about Limbaugh. They know he's on the radio, but other than that, they don't know anything about him. And it's kind of nice shining the bright light on him to everybody, like you say, everybody take a little look. Oh, he was a drug dealer. Wow. You know, I still argue with our local,
Mommy, turn it off. Turn it off. Quick, Mommy, turn it off. Ooh, gross. Yeah.
You know, we still argue about that. Now, he keeps on crying, oh, he's not a drug dealer. I'm sitting there going, look, in our state, if you have like 500 pills, you're considered you have drugs for resale.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very important point, Luke. The amount of the substance determines, and it seems kind of counterintuitive, but the amount of the substance determines the intent for what you want to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get above a certain number, you are at possession with intent to deliver. In other words, at least a mule and at the most a dealer.
Uh-huh.
So in Russia's case, the maid would have been the mule and he would have been the dealer.
Well, the thing is, think of it, he had 10,000. Assuming it's 1,000, that's 10 charges of drug dealing. That could have put him in jail for about 200 years. In Florida, I bet it does, because you know.
Well, we know there are. I mean, you know, when that all broke, Luke, there were stories out of people who were doing hard time.
Oh yeah.
For you know, a percent of what Rush had done.
Oh God! I mean, you know, they had people in jail for 10 years for taking what he took in a day.
Well, I'll tell you the other side of this coin. Since you brought the topic up. Something that Ben Birch told me.
Okay.
And that was, you know, we were talking, I mentioned the fact that, and we talked about it a couple of nights on the ago on the show, when Georgia Congressman Phil Gingrey had to call in and publicly apologize.
Oh, God. Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ben really is one of the sharpest knives in the drawer. I mean, you know, Ben can cut you looking at you. And Ben said, Bob, that's just Maoism.
Yeah.
Because, you know, during the Glorious Revolution and so forth, if you said something bad about Mao, the next thing you'd be doing is standing next to him publicly apologizing to him.
Mm-hmm. And looking scared the whole time.
He said Ben said that is straight out of the Shining Path.
You know, it's one of those things, it's like say, you know, we know he's what he is. We won't even go into that. That's some people may be eating. We don't want to have that happen to them right now. But, you know, there's some things that we all suspect about Limbaugh. You know, we still want anybody to explain to me what the handful of Viagra was doing on the all boys weekend.
To the island where juvenile male prostitution is a growth industry.
Oh, yes, indeedy. But no. We couldn't ask that question. We could just ask, you know, certain. You know, it's like I still always go back to if you ever want to ask anybody in the national press, you know, do you cover for people? Just always remember, always ask them, you know, on the Cheney shooting his friend in the face, always ask them, where was the Swiss Miss? You know, why did that never receive any public comment? You know, nobody in the national media mentioned squat about that.
Swiss Miss, instant alibi. Never mind. Sorry, old jingle.
I know. But you know what I mean? Things like that. You know, our press covers, and, you know, it's something I saw this week that somebody was talking about, said, isn't it amazing how now Democrats in charge of the White House, that amazingly the press corps is now coming, is able to stand up and get their hands out from under their butts.
So I take it that you don't share Cenk Uygur's opinion that at this point of the game it's Rush 177, Obama nothing.
I think to the Republicans they may think it is, but I think this in the long term is a win for Obama because, like I say, I think it shows him to a public that doesn't know him in detail. And like I say, you know, it's one of those things, you know, remember how good and strong a fellow named Hot Tub Tom was until Tom got to be the head Republican? And then a lot of people took a whole lot of look at Tom, and all of a sudden Tom had a whole lot of problems.
Yeah, the under the right light, you can see all those warts.
I was going to say.
And fungal infections on the skin, and yeah.
Well, you know how it is. It's like we said, you know, that's the only way that Limbaugh kept his TV show was, of course, they had to have guards on the doors and metal detectors so they could only import the right type of audiences. Because, like I say, he had a face made for stopping traffic, but, you know.
he looks like $1 million. Green and wrinkled. I'll be here all week.
Yes, sir. Everybody, please buy the veal. Yes, indeed, please. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we're sitting here going, you know, on the bailout. Everybody's going, well, that ain't going to work. I said, hell, nobody knows what's going to work. If somebody said, I know exactly what will work, fine. But, you know, this is something where, you know, I hope this bailout works the way it's supposed to. It may not. But like I say, this is something where nobody has any experience in this. We're kind of feeling our way along. I mean, we're hoping this will work, and hopefully it will. But it may not work 100%, but hopefully it will help enough. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. This is something that, you know, all these economists and stuff, they're guessing. I mean, when you see economists say,
well, if an economist says, I think I'd like to have a beer, he's guessing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that old gag about the mechanical engineer and the civil engineer and the economist trapped on the desert island. And they've got this crate of unopened tins of food, but no opener. Well, the mechanical, they go off separately to come up with a way to get the cans open. And the mechanical engineer, the civil engineer goes out and builds this little platform that involves rocks and coconut shells and you know, we're going to bash the thing. And the mechanical engineer goes and builds a fire where we'll superheat it till it explodes. And they look at the economist and say, how are you going to get it open? And he says, assume a can opener. So yeah, I mean, there's something, nobody really, but you know, there. If you look empirically at what has worked and what did not, I tend to trust Paul Krugman on this because he's paying attention to history.
Oh yeah.
And but the thing is, the one thing that ain't going to do none of that is all these stupid tax cuts.
No. You know, it's one of those things. You know, I've done it for the last 2-3 years. I've tried to clean up all my bills, and I'm at the point right now, hallelujah, I've got most of my debts taken care of. But I saw this coming, you know, something like this 3-4 years ago, and said it's time, you know, to tighten your belt and get everything straightened out.
And the banks, even though they've been bailed out, Luke, I don't know if you saw this or not, but this one just blew my doors off. I think Texas Betsy sent me this story. A guy in Atlanta is blowing the whistle on a new form of credit scoring.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, nothing that starts like that's going to end well.
No.
African-American man in Atlanta runs his own PR business.
Okay.
has never been, his father was apparently in the credit industry and raised him from a little kid upward, you know, don't screw up your credit. Pay your bills ahead of time. And he's never been late on anything. So I guess a couple of years ago, he got an American Express blue card, Luke.
Oh, gosh.
And Express
scare me.
And it had an excellent, you know, rewards program and everything. So he used it everywhere he went and paid the balance off at the end of the month, like you're supposed to. And he had a $10,500 line of credit.
Okay.
So he gets this letter in the mail saying, we have lowered your credit to $3,300. He's never been late. He's always, you know, never carries a balance. And there's nothing, but it turns out they are using a new form of credit scoring.
Yep.
And what they did with this guy, now, I mean, if he went out to a restaurant, he paid with his blue card. If he went to the grocery store, paid with his blue card. Everything he did, he went, but what he did not do is shop close to home very often. And a couple of months ago, he thought he would try to save himself a little money, and he went to Walmart, and he put it on his blue card. And that's when the bells and whistles started going off at American Express, because they are now scoring not just on your paybacks, but on the purchasing history and credit worthiness of the people who shop in the same store.
So it's not your history, it's everybody you know's history.
Right. It's kind of, you remember back in the 80s, before HIV AIDS broke and the big threat was, herpes?
Yeah.
And they had the ads out that said, well, you know, if you have sex with him, you're having sex with everybody he's ever had sex with.
Yeah.
Well, that has now been extended by the credit reporting agencies and the credit card companies to the idea of personal credit. So if you're standing in line and you're buying, a printer or, you know, groceries at Wally World, and you're standing in front of a guy who has gone belly up on more credit cards than Carter has little liver pills, suddenly your credit rating is affected by that guy's bad habits. Because you see these banks that stand behind the credit card companies, American Express took a ton of bailout money and became, you know, they got elevated. They got, you know, they went up to like, you know, 34th degree American Express on our bailout money. And they're sitting on all that going, oh, we want to keep this now. And the only way we can keep this is not lending it. And so they have to come up with a new way. Hey, wait. The African American guy from Atlanta who pays off all of his bills all the time. He just went to Walmart. Screw him!
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those things, it's like, you're doing the right thing, and now their idea is, well, let's punish them for that. How dare you? You paid off your bills on time? Well, we can't reward that.
I mean, this guy, what's the best credit score you can have, like 740 or something?
Oh, God.
And he had a 690?
And getting from 690 to 740, it takes you 10 years.
Right. Get from 690 to 740 takes you 10 years, and an inheritance from Thurston Howell III.
Yeah. When you get up at the top, those last few points takes forever. But you know what I mean? It is one of those things. It's, you know, here we see these banks and they're saying, well, we have the bailout, you know, and some of them are not, some of the Republicans are like, well, we have to get more money to the banks and such. And it's like, no, they've had their shot and they blew it. If they're going to, you know, if they're going to now come along and say, we need more money, it's the old fool me once, fool me twice. They've had their one time. It ain't going to happen again. If they show up with their hands out, it's like, well, that's fine. Now head over the deed to the building. You know, if you don't want money from us, we're going to get our money. We know it's going to get back to us somehow.
Well, and not only that, it's what they're doing. It has come out, and our buddy Gerard Poppy from the chat room pointed this out to me. I had the story a while back about this conference call that was where the guy from Home Depot, whose name's Bernie Marcus, and he's a real thug. They, in the Huffington Post story, they call him a charismatic co-founder of Home Depot. He's a thug. He was on this conference call talking about the Employee Free Choice Act and about how retailers needed to get behind McCain and, you know, Godzilla from Wasilla and all of that. And in this phone call, Bernie Marcus says that anybody who any retail CEO who doesn't should be taken out and shot, you know, from Maoism to Stalinism. Well, lo and behold, it's broken. It turns out that this conference call was hosted and ginned up not by Bernie Marcus, not by not by Office Depot or any of these other groups that, of course, hate the idea of workers being able to organize and take part in a collective bargaining unit, you know, Walmart, people like that. No, this whole conference call, Luke, was put together by Bank of America. It was paid for with TARP money.
I tell you what, like I say, Bank of America went out and they, you know what, in the pond. And I, like I say, now they're going to be the ones going to start drinking with it. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, these guys, it's like, say, you're sitting there going, you've got an automatic and you're sitting there going, how many of your toes have you shot off so far? Because apparently you ain't got enough of them yet.
But, you know, frankly, I want this, and then I'll just be straight up, Luke. I want this kind of conduct punished.
Oh, yeah, it should be. I mean, you know, it's like I said a minute ago. I said, you know, they're to the point now that thanks to the banks, and, you know, we saw what happened with the big car, the car dealerships. But if anybody else shows up and wants any kind of help, as I say, they're going to have to, you know, we'll use Russia's terms. They better bend over and grab hold of their ankles. Because that's what they're gonna have to do.
He is a silver tongued devil, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He uses his tongue better than. Never mind.
Well, yes, indeed, he missed. Oh God, I'm sorry. I flashed into that there for just a moment. That was just so good. Thank you.
Daggone it, Mr. Lamar! You use your tongue.
I do miss him. He's such a fun guy. Oh well, but you know what I mean. And isn't it fun that image that Rush called up? You're sitting there going, "Gee, Rush, what did you think of that image?" But let's go on to another part of that. But you know what I mean. It's one of those things. It's like I say that they had their chance and they you know did it in and now anybody that goes up and asks for help, the Congress, whoever you know runs in whatever committee ought to be telling them, you know, the minute they sat down said. You know, you better bring a whole lot of stuff that you can sign over to us for getting this, because we ain't giving you money anymore just on your good looks. So congratulations, we're going to pay you your way. You're going to have to show up here with a whole lot of collateral, and you're going to have to sign it over to us before we even think about giving you money.
I'm all for it, and frankly, I'd like to. Enough of these half measures. Look, this may sound outrageously socialist and everything, but what if we took some stimulus money and forgave a bunch of student loan principals?
I agree.
What if we took that money and actually gave $5,000 or $10,000 to a family of four?
Yeah.
Not a tax rebate, not a credit. Give to and do it, you know, kind of like, I don't know, some sort of a gift card where it can only be used for purchases.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like I said, the next time the banks go up and say this, say, okay, you know what, we're going to help you. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to give money to all these people who have the bad mortgages so they can pay you a little bit of money, but they're going to be paying off their houses.
Yeah, or make it so that it can be used on mortgage payments or. You know, or something that says it can be used on American-made goods.
Yeah, but you know,
because that would that simple provision alone, Luke, would keep it from being used at Wally World.
True enough, but you know, it's one of those things. It's like, oh, one thing I want to tell you, just off totally off topic. Just I was looking through the schedule tomorrow, and there's a good movie. I know you're a good movie fan, like I am. You get up about 10, or I think about 9:45 tomorrow morning, Turner Classic Movie showing a really good movie, a good old movie, DOA.
Oh, man, that is a good one. That is a very good old movie.
But, you know, it is one of those things. Sometimes you're watching people, you know, and I've got to the point now. Every time I've turned, you know, and I can't stand it anymore. It's, you know, it's like listening. It's like listening to the, to Peanut Brain. You know, when I see them, when they're sitting here ripping, you know, when Russia's ripping somebody, and they're carrying it now. I have turned the sound off. That's like I have trouble enough. Just sort of like hear his voice. You just want to just, you know, beat on the thing. Oh, have you noticed how all of a sudden Mr. Dobbs is all of a sudden really interested in a whole lot of stuff? Oh, he's going to be, I think.
Yeah, he's fresh out of Mexicans.
Well, like I say, I think he's going to be the leader fighting the Free Choice Act. I got a feeling he's going
to
be.
Oh, he's been working it for a while. You know, they're taking away their right. They're taking away their right to vote. The right, the sacred right of a secret ballot is destroyed by the employee free choice. You know, lying sack it.
It's the reverse of anything, you bastard.
Exactly. It is a majority decision on the part of the employees.
I know.
But, yeah, and no, but it's gonna get big, ugly, and big, nasty.
Yeah, as I say, you know, it's like this thing. You saw the thing. Media Matters had this thing with, was it Goldberg and one or two of these others? They were using this Tom Brokaw and a Charlie Rose interview. And it wasn't amazing. They were taking his answers to certain questions and changing the questions. It's like he answered something to, like, question number three. He had an answer. Well, we took that answer. We put it to question number seven. You know, last time I checked, that's kind of considered illegal in most journalism.
It is at least slimy.
But you know what I mean? When you take an answer for one question, I'm just sitting there going, okay, does that mean we can take Russia's answers now, start cutting them up, and re-put the words together any way we want to, too? Would that be okay?
You know, I think there's a parody of him that is like that. The one where he announces, I'm a Nazi, that song.
Oh, yeah. I think it's Stephanie Miller or somebody used to do that all the time. Or, Randy, I guess, used to play that all the time. Used to play that, you know. that. And whoever... If it's not him or somebody filling in some of it, whoever does it does a really good job. If it's an impersonation,
I always thought it was just a brilliant piece of editing.
It may be, but that's what I mean. It's so good, it's hard to tell that it's edited. You know what I mean? So I didn't know if maybe it was somebody doing voices. You know, but somebody like Lamut was the guy. The guy used to do Orson Welles. LaRouche. I can't think what his last name.
Lyndon.
No. The guy used to do Pinky and the Brain.
Oh, God, yeah, I know.
Yeah, I can't think what his exact name is, but he used to do voices like that, which is perfect, you know what I mean. So, well, I tell you what, it's top of the hour, bud. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. Great conversation, Luke. Thank you so much.
Good weekend. We'll try again next time.
All right, we'll hit her again. You have a good weekend.
Go Steelers.
Go Steelers and keep feeling better.
All right, bud.
Bye now.
Yeah, bye.
Yeah, just because I can't stand having a reference that making a reference and then not doing something with it. We'll go right back to the phones real quick. But this is just one of those that you kind of, well, or maybe you don't. Yeah, here it goes. It's slowly but surely. Or not. Never mind. Let's just go to the phones. Ah, doggone it. A little patience, folks. A little patience. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yeah, Sandra.
Hey, I know I'm calling. What is it, 2 days in a row?
Oh, that's okay. Then don't,
but,
no sweat.
Listen, did you see what Claire McCaskill said?
Oh, yeah, we were. I think that Susan and I were talking about that a little bit ago.
She said these people are on the floor of the Senate, she said these people are idiots. And she said you can't use taxpayer money to pay out $18 billion in bonus. Ta-da! And apparently she's writing some bill. But the funny thing about this story is that, oh, she didn't consult, you know, the Obama administration. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's called plausible deniability.
Oh, please. But it's just kind of like, you know, what does it take for these people to wake up? Obviously, she's getting an earful or something, because nobody else seems to be thinking that this $18 billion in bonuses from these companies that get taxpayer dollars is wrong, but it's horrible.
Oh, not only are people not complaining about it, you've got Rudy Guy in a Dress Giuliani out there saying the more bonuses there are, the better off it is for New York.
No, it's really gross. I mean, no. The only reason why these people have these sort of bonuses is because the tax code has been raped to the point where these people get paid so much, instead of it going into the companies or into other sort of entities that it used to go when it was at 70% on the top, it's now going in their pockets. It reminds me of what it used to be like in the 20s and 30s when, was it Carnegie used to walk around and give away dimes and stuff? Where you just had to be dependent on the charity of these bastards? Please.
Well, and see, the other, I mean, now this is the crazy, this just goes to prove that I will never, I mean, I yak behind a microphone. I'm no good at running businesses. But then this proves why. See, I got this crazy notion, Sandra, that if you get a bonus, it means you've done better this year than you did the year before.
Oh, no. You really are ass backwards, aren't you, Bob? What's up?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I need the re-education camp or something.
Yeah, man, you missed that school that all these other bastards went to. What the hell?
I know. It's that same thing that says, you know, if you lose $9 billion in the Coalition Provisional Authority, don't sweat it. Come home and get a Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Yeah, no, it's the same two-tier system that's just it's a gaping hole in this country now with money, with, you know, law. Everything is two. There's us, and then there's them. You know?
Right, and when we're the them and they're the us's, we lose.
No,
but we've got,
I mean,
there's so... That's the frustrating part, Sandra. You know, you've got a Claire McCaskill out there saying the right things, and the White House sort of dancing away from her, and nobody else. And you know, this is that whole thing that we've talked about in the past, Sandra. You know, where there's, you know, some idiotic Republican out there, some idiotic Republican voter who thinks, well, you know, if I just let them get away with murder, I might need to kill somebody someday too, and then I'll get away with it. No, dummy, you're working class.
No, not only that, or one day I'll be rich, so all the rich people shouldn't be taxed, that canard.
Yeah.
Right? Same kind of mentality, yeah.
So, I don't get it, you know, from this stimulus package to, you know, the fight that's really ginning up about employee free choice.
Well, did you hear what she said about that, too, which is interesting? She's saying that she knows a few Republicans who would support it, and that the administration, we need to be passing this bill sooner rather than later. I thought that was an interesting.
Well, see, but I was told directly by the Senate Majority Leader a week ago that we would have, and the words he used, it was interesting. He didn't call it the Employee Free Choice Act. Harry Reid said we would have a card check bill by summer. Summer. Last I checked, that starts on June the 20th.
Well, yeah, no, is that what they're trying to shoot for?
That's what the Senate Majority Leader said. That's what Harry Reid said. I mean, I got audio of it.
No, I'm not disputing that. I'm just quite surprised that. Yeah,
I mean, let's make sure we give the other side all the Home Depots and Bank of America's. Let's make sure we give them plenty of time to ramp up a real good Harry and Louise, so that they can beat this damn thing back.
Well,
I mean, whatever happened to you know, punch them again?
No, is there some reason why they need to wait until till June, or
that's the, or, I wasn't jerking you around. That's the only reason I can come up with.
Because we were thinking that this bill should be one of the part of what he's coming out with the first 100 days, right? Isn't that what you were thinking?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, and Wayne was like, you know, this is job one.
Right. I mean, this is sort of, yeah, you have the stimulus because the economy is falling apart, but this labor law goes hand in hand with leveling the playing field, so it's all combined.
Well, yeah, exactly, Sandra. For instance, It makes no sense to start work on health care before you start work on employee free choice, because if you pass employee free choice and it's signed into law and people can start organizing into collective bargaining units and becoming part of locals, they're going to have access to the health care from their union.
Yeah, not only that, but they estimate that if this bill passes, you can see some dramatic changes within 18 months. I mean, that's how dramatic.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, I'm just using health care as an example. If you pass EFCA, then in a few months, you're going to see a dramatic drop in the roles of the uninsured.
Well, and the other thing about the health care, though, I read in The Hill recently that they've already made noises that any kind of discussion on a health care reform may not even come up in 2 years, Bob.
If it's not being talked about inside of year one, it's another term of Congress that it doesn't happen.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So this is the sort of, you know, and this is the person who made this statement was like the number, I don't know who the number three is in the House, but it was not good. What I read, I was like, what? You know, already sort of taking things, you know how I love to take things off the table and put them on the table and all that bullshit?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this is being taken off the table, and this is, you know, The Hill, you know, The Hill is a sort of whatever, I guess it's the reporting from Congress.
Yeah, it's the congressional newspaper.
Right, and that's what I saw, and that didn't, I was a bit taken aback by that. So when you say June for this labor law, I see
that's not inspiring, is it?
No, and, you know, I really don't, I'm sorry that, you know, these calls are just like sort of a bitch fest about the Democrats, but you know, I need things to start happening. You see what I'm saying? Because
So do I.
Well, I don't need to be looking at the Republicans celebrating in some nether parallel universe their success. I'm like, wait a minute. The economy is tanking, and they're celebrating that they voted in lockstep against what is supposed to help. I don't understand why they're celebrating. Are they that far removed, or are we removed? I'm confused. I am too.
I feel like I'm through the looking glass, Sandra.
Right, well, right. Alice in Wonderland for sure. Because to me, they should not be celebrating. I don't get where the victory is for the Republicans on this one.
But the thing is, I think if you again, you know, if you sort of put them in one of those cells at Guantanamo and give them a bottle of liquor and let them, you know, get them to start telling the truth. You'll find out that they know that they are on, the Republicans know that they are on the verge of utter irrelevance, you know, generational irrelevance.
Yeah, well, and if that's how they're playing it, then what they did was the right way for an opposition party to behave, and perhaps the Democrats should take a few pages out of it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I want damn the torpedoes and full steam ahead.
Well, there's no reason now for, and this is why I'm kind of in this limbo, because I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. It's like, okay, Obama, you tried it. Now what? You understand?
I do, Sandra. But okay, here's the other side of that coin. Harry Reid, and I said this last night, and I know there's people that don't like it when I say this. Harry Reid does not control the votes of his own party in the Senate. I can prove it here in a little bit. But with that in mind, I think everybody knows what's going to happen when the stimulus package goes to the United States Senate. It's going to die there.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, but there's a huge problem with that. I can say it in, you know, a phrase, 3.8 contraction in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, or how about 100,000 jobs in 1 week?
Well, you know what I'm saying? It's like we're not, you know, I don't, you know, these sort of games that this legislator is playing is, you know, it's like the real world is going to get in the way of that bullshit. You understand?
Yes, I do. But what we're seeing, you know, if you want to, and I know you're prone to play in historical perspective like I am, Sandra. You know, the crash started in 1929 with things like Smoot-Hawley and of course the market crash itself. You know, those were the twin harbingers of the Great Depression, and it continued on with a it continued on until Roosevelt took office in March of 1933, at which point it was in full on, you know, depression.
Yeah.
And the hope was that, well, you know, Barack Obama's got a chance to nip this in the bud.
Oh, before we get to a full-on depression, I understand what you're saying, but they're behaving like Hoover did, though, continually.
Well, yeah, the Republicans are, because they still this is the psychosis under which they operate. They're okay with a lot of this, the Republicans are, because they've still got that drown the government in the bathtub attitude. They hate this government, Sandra. I'm not trying to oversimplify, and I know I'm not, and if I sound like I'm talking down, I don't mean to. They aim to break this country on the rack of their own economics.
Yeah, no, I obviously, because their mentality is such, I mean, because they don't seem to see the writing on the wall. But the Democrats risk having this going down with them if they don't delineate. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
It's just sort of the mealy mouth, like they seem to be about ready to do with it. They're going to get blamed. And you know how the public will blame the Democrats with the quickness.
And see, that's the part that you and I and the rest of the Horn audience realize. because we're a little bit more plugged in than the average American Idol, you know, Dancing with a Millionaire's Nose audience member.
Yeah, well, no, because most Americans now know Obama, because he's a black man. You see what I'm saying? There he is. He's the president. So don't take too much to connect the dots when the shit continues again.
Oh, the black man screwing everything up. They warned us.
I'm just saying, it's just sort of, it's not just some sort of generic frat boy anymore.
How long until some right-wing gas bag calls him Jimmy Carter with a tan?
Whatever, you know what I mean? I know. And not only that, but he has to distinguish himself right away. And doing this bipartisan shit, that's tired. I didn't see Bush doing none of that. That fool tried to destroy Social Security off of a fake mandate. And Obama is doing what with his mandate? Please tell me. What the hell is he doing?
Well, let's back up for a minute then. Let's try to put on our Obama cool sunglasses.
The Ray-Ban.
Yeah. And man, he does make a pair of those things look good.
They look great, that style. Anyway, yes.
But, okay, so we back up and he's reached out. You know, he had liberal bloggers and talkers, and gave them peanut butter and crackers and a styrofoam cup of Kool-Aid for a luncheon. All right, this is back before the inauguration. Meanwhile, he goes to dinner at
George Will,
bow tie freak, not Tucker Carlson,
yeah,
wrong bow tie.
Right there.
Okay, and William Crystal and George Will, and they all sit around, and they have dinner, and, you know, hummingbird tongue canapes and lark's vomit trifles and whatever.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I got you.
And you know, and the world, and the liberal world, you know, the Sandras and the Bobs and the Horn listeners are just sitting here with that, you know, looking like that Norwegian painting with the two hands on the side of the face and the mouth wide open going, ah! What the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
And we got Rick Warren at the inauguration. We praying all over the place. The Democrats give up women's health care and they give up a green space renovation, doing everything the Republicans want. And it comes out of the House. The stimulus bill comes out of the House, goes over to the Senate, and dies. And then Obama gets to look up. Okay, this is that whole Sun Tzu kind of thing. Then Obama looks up and says, God, what do I got to do? I tried nice. Nice is over. Now we're going to do what we got to do. Now, can you envision that scenario? I mean, am I just totally off the chain? Can you see them? Not does it work, Sandra, but can you see them thinking that way?
Well, I actually think that Obama somewhere thought that he could charm these people or get them to see his way. That's what worries me. So,
yeah, but if he actually thought he could, That would indicate that he had no comprehension of the nature of the Republican Party whatsoever. That would mean that he does not understand that Republicans always, always, always put party before country.
Okay, well, I'm assuming that he must have some sort of other plan going on, but he doesn't have much time to sort of experiment.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's the time factor.
You know?
Because I know it's been said that the Senate is going to be very much harder for the Republicans than it is for the Democrats in 2010 because who's up and who's not. I understand all that, but like we've said before, history does not bode well for an off-year election for a first-term president.
And, you know, two years from now, if nothing substantial is done, I'm not too sure where this so-called recession is going to be, you know.
Well, it may. I don't know that we're going to be even. Recession will be a word fondly remembered.
Right. I'm just saying. I think that 24 months, he doesn't really have the luxury. That's what I mean. I don't. You know, unless I'm reading it totally wrong, it looks like we're a half a year away from it going really bad. You know, if they don't.
Yeah, we're still steaming at the iceberg and not even backing off the engines.
Yeah, so I don't know, you know, I am still just shaking my head and laughing at the idea the Republicans gave him not one vote, you know.
And interestingly, I was told that, I'm being told in the chat room by our buddy Benedict at Large, he says that William Crystal was told at George Will's party, get this, that's when he was told that he was gone at the New York Times.
By who?
I guess by the muckety mucks of the New York Times.
Well,
but you know, gone but not forgotten. I mean, talk about landed on your feet. He leaves the New York Times and he gets a column at the Washington Post.
Oh yeah, but the Washington Post has become a real sort of frightening paper. Have you noticed?
Yeah, it's creepy.
It's really creepy. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Every time I read an article, especially during this war in Gaza, I was like, damn, this is getting really, I don't know if they're neocons there now or what, but yikes.
I think they're trying to play to where the money is.
Oh, God.
They don't think that, you know, because it's Washington, D.C., you know, forget about it, Jake, it's Chinatown. Because, you know, people inside that weird little geographic square, they think really differently from how we do. And if you talk, and you know, the idea of everybody being able to go to the doctor when they're sick is radical leftism inside the territorial confines of the District of Columbia, at least inside the political chattering class. And it, you know, it's not out here.
Well, what happened with Roosevelt, I mean, the real world sort of hit him. I would like to think that, I don't know, I just wonder how much more suffering and pain is going to happen before they actually do something decisive, you know, that's my worry. It's sort of real. When you lose a job, that's not anything esoteric. That's horrible, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. And it's
and when you have massive unemployment, it's just yuck. I don't mean to be inarticulate, but I just think about it.
No, but, you know, onomatopoeia is a word for a reason. It is yuck. And see, the thing is, we're sitting here with our mouths hanging open and everything, looking at 100,000 jobs gone in a week, Sandra.
Yeah.
But you know what? We haven't begun to contemplate. The economy doesn't know what that means. Frankly, the economy doesn't know what it means, what happened in December. Because
it takes
a couple of months for the real desperation to set in, you know, when, you know, you were doing okay and everybody put the change in the jar. And it's about 2 months before you start dumping out that giant plastic Coca-Cola or Corona bottle and start counting out them pennies trying to make the power bill.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that's definitely sort of the domino effect of that, those sort of numbers. It is. It's hard to even wrap your head around the fallout from 500,000 jobs going away. You're right about that. That's
And see, where's the, and I mean, did I miss something? Have we acted on an emergency basis to extend unemployment compensation yet? Was I asleep when that didn't happen?
No, I do think that there was some extension. But, you know, because I live in California, it's sort of like, was it extended here? You know what I mean? Because it's so bad here. The unemployment is officially 9.3%, which means it's probably about 14, 15, right? So it's out of control in California. But they're going to run out of money here in a month, like 2 weeks or something for the unemployment. I think that's going on here. So I'm kind of confused if it's where the Fed and the state comes in on that, but.
I share your confusion.
I'm sure I just made you more confused, but yeah, you know, it is. It's a problem.
I mean, why is it so hard? I mean, and this is that overarching question. I mean, because you know how the Republicans in Congress will respond to it, Sandra. Why is it so hard to stand up and say, hey, you know, idiots, if we give poor folks money, poor folks will spend money, and they'll spend it really dumbly on stuff like food. You know, why is it so hard to craft a bill? I mean, we're one, two sentences. Why is it so hard to craft a bill that puts a significant chunk of change into food stamps and unemployment compensation?
Well, no. How about a moratorium on the payroll tax? Don't get me started. I'll fix this shit in a minute. Put a moratorium on the payroll taxes. That'll get money into people's pockets with the quickness. Have the government pay that tax for a while until we're out of the crisis. Trust me, that little step there would do a whole bunch.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about, because, again, you're talking about stuff going into the retail sector.
But yeah, no, and it's just sort of, you know, like I said, the tax setup here is really quite bad since the Reagan era. I mean, what he did to the payroll tax was such a regressive tax on us, you know?
Yeah, well, that's what they do.
No, but people just forget. They forget about the payroll tax. I mean, Reagan raised that bitch up a lot. Wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like the S-chip bill. They got to the S-chip bill before they got to unemployment. And I don't want to sound hard-hearted or anything, but as a smoker, I am more than happy to provide expanded children's health insurance for America's uninsured children. I'm more than happy. But, you know, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with the pop tax? You know, why is it always the people who use gasoline, smoke, or drink beer, liquor, or wine who wind up on the hook for stuff that's necessary?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, yeah, the whole thing is just a joke. I mean, everyone should chip in for children's health care. That's my problem with the way that's funded. I mean, the cigarette smoker, yeah, all right, god damn, you know?
Well, I mean, I know what I'm doing to me, and I guess it's bad for the rest of everybody, but then again, there's, you know, smog and mercury, and God almighty, Sandra, we found out there's mercury in high fructose corn syrup.
Oh, God, you know what? Stop. I know corn syrup is really bad overall, but I hadn't heard that one, man. I'm still tripping over the peanut butter.
Yeah, well, you know, so the peanut butter is poisoned with salmonella. I ship it anyway because it costs more to take it to the dump.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, yeah, you know, you have a nice weekend. I got to go.
No, I'm good. I know. Go scream, Sandra.
Okay.
Take care. Bye now. Yeah, did you catch that? They knew the peanut butter was poison when they sent it out. And they sent it out anyway. Because, see, we don't have enough inspectors from the USDA or the Food and Drug Administration to make sure that sleazy manufacturers don't send out poison peanut butter. And then the thing with the high fructose corn syrup. Now, we're informed people. We've been talking about high fructose corn syrup for quite a while. You know, it was way back in the Omnivore's Dilemma when Michael Pollan said that there was more security around the way high fructose corn syrup is produced has more in common with oil refining than it does with food. And now we find the stuff has intolerable amounts of mercury in it. Nice, huh? Remember the little AstroTurf commercial that was out there? Honey, you want a popsicle? Well, no, that's got high fructose corn syrup in it. Well, high fructose corn syrup is good for you in moderate amounts. Really, mercury's good for you in moderate amounts. I don't think you'll find a scientist who's willing to say that who hasn't already been, you know, paid off, kind of like Exxon pays off the bogus climate scientists, some food scientist who's been paid off by Monsanto or Archer Daniels Midland and Market Basket to the world. Mercury. It is mercury, isn't it? Yeah, I think it's mercury. Nice. And then there's the beryllium at Los Alamos, but we haven't gotten into that yet. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob.
Hey, Ben.
How you doing?
Just trying not to scream.
You know, I knew there was a reason I never darkened the door of Walmart.
It ruined your credit.
Yeah, my credit score is still well above 700. Very happy with it.
Yeah. Well, stay.
Now that I've heard this, you know, if we publicize this, we could kill Walmart.
Well, you got to wonder. I mean, they've got an army of people there in Bentonville. They got to have looks on their faces like dogs passing peach pits at this news if they've heard it.
Well, I think that we need to blog and post that every single place in the world, because once the guys that we used to call yuppie scum hear this, they're already in enough trouble. They're already worried they're going to lose their credit cards that they absolutely have to get that 97-inch television set for the Super Bowl.
97? Right? They're doing 97 now?
Well, actually, I don't know about 97. I didn't get 103.
it's the home Jumbotron.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's a Diamondtron. It's 75,000.
I said I was trying not to scream, Ben.
But these
You're working
guys,
against me here.
These, I've still got the two 27-inch TV sets I bought from the loading dock at Zenith when I worked there. They used to give us television sets. They'd say, "Here, take this television set home for a evaluation."
Right.
And then at the end of the year, you had the choice. Either ship the television set back to them, or pay the scrap price for it and keep it. Okay, but you had to fill out the little evaluation form, and that is how it wasn't income.
That's a nice racket.
It's a nice racket.
But by the same token, you got to get people to pay for it. I mean, I've become a real believer in reading online reviews at places like CNET and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are all these people out there that back when we were building a new computer and stuff, Peter and I researched just which motherboard to go with. And there are these guys that get all this cool stuff sent to them to use and write a review. I got to figure out a way to get into that racket.
So you were picking out the motherboard very carefully, so you were being mother pluckers?
Oh, you're bad. Thank God this is the weekend coming.
Yeah. I am so punchy this week. But if that's really the truth, if that story is actually verifiably true and not an urban legend, I'm going to give it a few days. I'm going to make sure the whole world hears this thing.
Well, you know, I think we should. And I mean, it seemed a pretty reputable report because it had non-denial denials from American Express in it.
Yep. Send me that URL, and I will pass it on to the Snopes people.
Okay.
And see what they can say about it, because if that's true, they'll say, and if it's not true, they'll say.
Although, I don't know about you, but Snopes, every now and then, Snopes gets a little editorial on stuff.
True, but I think they're basically on our side, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'd like to, I mean, the guy has set up a website, and where is this URL? Let me just see if it might still be in the tabs. Nope. Mercury in the corn syrup? No. No, I don't see it in the tabs that I've got open here, but I'm pretty sure that Texas Betsy sent me the story.
I can find it. I Google's good.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know how to string together a search phrase better than I can, but it had to do with African-American man in Atlanta, near perfect credit, American Express blue card, shopped at Walmart, and that was the only thing he had done differently. And he got his credit limit dumped from 10,000 to 3,300.
How is this not class war?
It is.
That's exactly what this is. This is class war, and you know what? There is something that the United States government has available to it that
RICO?
Let's talk about for a minute. Just a minute.
Okay.
And that is, you are aware that there is no place in the Constitution where the right to property is actually defined.
No, that's more of that precatory language at the front end that Fat Tony Scalia says isn't binding.
That's correct. And life, liberty, and property was not even in the Declaration of Independence, despite John Quincy Adams wanting it there.
Well, the Constitution, this is a true story. Fat Tony Scalia has said that where it says promote the general welfare in the preamble to the Constitution, he says the preamble isn't law.
That is so different from every constitutional law class I audited when I went to the University of Chicago that it's not even funny.
Well, the thing that's a problem for Fat Tony, however, is the fact that also contained in there is another phrase that is absolutely cherished by the property rights crowd, and that is secure the blessings of liberty.
Well, you know, I think the blessings of liberty are secured most effectively when people are well-fed, well-clothed, well-housed, and well-cared for, and where they have an opportunity to go do a good hard day's work for a decent pay. That's when we have secured the blessings of liberty. Until then, we are living in a nation of pirates.
Right, because when you and your spouse have to go to work, and one of you, for instance, doesn't, and I'm not being sexist about this, male or female, can't stay home and make sure that because, you know, keeping a home is a damn job. When one of you can't, then you don't have the blessings of liberty. When everybody has to work two or three or four jobs, that ain't liberty.
So here's my concept. Here's my concept.
Okie doke.
Since you don't really have a right to property, and moreover, since actually, in technical point of fact, you don't own any money. Okay? Money is actually owned by the Federal Reserve. You don't own it. And that's been tested in a couple of cases now. So the fact of the matter is we can take your property away from you with an act of Congress at any time, and it's constitutional. And we need to come up with some rules whereby we identify basically piratical bastards who have gamed the system and scammed us all to death. And every single one of them, we will bust them back to $1 million cash value. I'm not saying make them broke. I'm not saying have them worry about where their next meal's coming from. I'm not saying, you know, that they're not going to be able to buy a house somewhere and live a decent life on the fruits of their labors. I'm saying every single bloody one of them, $1 million United States is all you are entitled to keep if you obtained your money in this way. And I would give it to a review board, not an adversarial process. You can issue a statement to them, but you can't cross-examine anything, and their judgment is final. And put that into law because it's constitutional.
Well, you know, that is not far, for instance, Ben, from what was done back under the Reagan and first Bush administrations with the RICO statute.
That was what was done with RICO. That's what Resolution Trust did to people.
Because
Resolution Trust went and recaptured a lot of bank salaries.
Well, in RICO, if a guy was charged, not convicted, mind you, just charged, under RICO, say he was a drug dealer, they would go and literally take the money he paid to his defense lawyer away, not from the drug dealer, but away from the lawyer, who had nothing to do with the criminal enterprise whatsoever. They would
right.
take the retainer away from the lawyer so that the guy couldn't secure a competent defense.
Yep. And in fact, that's not stopped. You know that's not stopped.
Mm-mm.
You know, that was...
No, that goes on.
Oh, yeah. In fact, Homeland Security uses that all the time. Or did. I'm sure it isn't doing it now.
But it's, you know, what you've, you know, the point is what, and Resolution Trust is another example, what you have just proposed is not some sort of out there concept.
No. We have a right to regulate how people do business in this country, and we have a right to regulate how wealth may be acquired. That's what the capital gains tax was originally intended to do. The capital gains tax was intended to be very high and a really large portion of whatever capital gains you realized. And we're talking realized capital gains here. We're not talking hypothetical capital gains. So you can go and accumulate stuff all you want. The minute you realize it, the minute you sell that expensive house, that's when this kicks in.
Well, I tell you what, our buddy Marty out in California just kindly provided me the link. So when you get done here, look immediately at your email.
Okay.
And you will find the link to the story about the credit limits being adjusted. So let me just everything's right. There it goes. Thanks,
yeah,
Marty.
See,
and
we can do. You see, the fun thing about this is it will damage Walmart. At the same time, we know Walmart is like a brontosaurus. If you cut it, if you cut it and it's bleeding out, it's going to take years to die. So this does not take Walmart away from the people who right now are too poor to afford anything else. It's going to die later. By the time we're done with Walmart, Walmart can be done. I'm feeling rather vindictive towards these guys, as you might be able to tell.
I think feeling vindictive toward them is not an improper emotion at this point, Ben.
No. They have robbed us blind, and they have done so in a way that produced no value. And that's the big problem I have got. You see, capitalism depends upon your definition of the word capitalism. Back in the 1890s, when these terms originated, there was industrialism, which is you know what you do when you take capital and you buy physical plant and you hire workers and you produce a product and you sell it abroad in the world and you generate something real. Back then, capitalism was what you did when you then bought the stocks to that company and manipulated it and racked it up.
You capitalized the worth. You took the worth of the physical product and turned it into phony baloney stock.
Yes, you turned it into stock that you then attempt to treat as though it was some kind of fixed value asset, and you used it to leverage other things.
Right, which in turn leads to the commoditization of imaginary conceptual things. One of the first
wind up with junk bonds.
You wind up with junk bonds and derivatives.
And derivatives and packages of dodgy mortgages being used to secure loans.
I'll never forget the first time, Ben, that I heard an insurance salesman refer to an insurance policy to me as a product. Because I looked at him and said, are you out of your mind? A product? Well, yeah, we've got great insurance products, Bob. I said, they're not products. They're policies. No, they're products. They have real worth. And that was just a conversation that I wasn't, you know, up to. But precisely, when the gamble on whether or not someone will be able to pay their home mortgage is treated as a tangible good, you know you're in pretty big trouble.
It's a risk. Now, I don't have any trouble with somebody taking their funds and risking them by allowing someone else to, here's $35,000, go buy that home. and pay me back, you know, 15% interest and the principal for 30 years. I don't have any problem with that. If you're careful with that, as you should be, if you're the officer of a corporation, you should exercise due diligence with the care, with the money of that corporation. You should be able to loan that money out, and you should then be able to put it as an asset on your books, as what they call a tentative or unrealized asset for evaluation of your actual net worth. But you can't actually spend that because it's an unrealized asset.
Right, and you can't base salaries on it. And
right.
your heart
salaries need to be based on your actual income. Are you collecting on the mortgages you've made? Are you actually making good on the things that the bank cares about by actually, you know, collecting the mortgages, finding the people who actually, you know, can't pay anymore, and finding some way to separate them from the asset they can't pay for without actually destroying the asset. Foreclosure is not a nice thing, but sometimes a bank is going to have to do that.
But when you make an entire sector of a market out of enticing people into indebtedness, which you know on the front end they can't afford.
Well, and which you're going to fob off on somebody else tomorrow, so it's not even your problem.
Right. I mean, you're talking in this scenario, Ben, about the classic common law definition of fraud.
Exactly right. That's what we've got here, and it's RICO. And if we needed any more justification than that, we could just
$100,000
RICO suit on the entire United States financial system, and then just go proceed and take care of it.
A hundred thousand jobs in 1 week. I'd say you could ask any of those 100,000, and they'd say that's justification enough.
So here's the deal. That is how money ought to be. That capitalism has a role. You know, you've got money and you want to lend it, you want to use it, you don't want to be an industrialist. That is the role capitalism should play. It is the paper chase where you play a game of telephone with an asset until nobody really knows what it's worth. To where banks are buying up assets, are buying up mortgages, where in point of fact, when they bought those mortgages, they never got the right paperwork, and then when they go to foreclose, they can't. You know, if the guy who they're foreclosing on has a good lawyer, he can basically prevent foreclosure indefinitely. Because there are a lot of banks now holding paper that is improper paper. Because the banks closed and people left and files have been lost and things happened. Because all these banks merged and remerged like the blobs in a lava lamp. so quickly and just so thoroughly mixed everything around that it's impossible to untangle now. And that's where a lot of these bad assets are. A lot of these bad assets are actually things where you can't really demonstrate that you have the right to collect on the mortgage.
And how do you collect on? I guess to a certain extent we're chasing our tail, which is the nature of the derivative market in the first place, because you wind up with banks buying interests in things that they originally sold, knowing that it was the bogus, thinking that it had been. Well, and that was the whole thing, is that everybody understood on the front end that this stuff was garbage.
Oh yeah,
but they were trying to subject it to, I guess, sequential baptism.
Yeah.
Until they'd sold it to enough shills that they, well, you know, there are old stories that took place here in West Virginia, Ben, and I was telling somebody about it a while back. The oil and gas industry was big in this state, and over in areas even where they have no coal. And that industry was so rife with just larceny and tricksterism and fraud. The way they did it here, a working interest in a gas well in West Virginia would be sold in shares. And the working definition was that a share of a gas well was a 1/32nd working interest.
Mm-hmm. They sell 90 or 100 shares.
Yeah, it was nothing to sell 96 shares.
Yep.
While that appears to be tangible, the fraud is what renders it bogus. And the same thing happens, you know, with a home mortgage.
There has been fraud, I mean, just left and right. I mean, the other thing to understand here is once you've got the system reined in properly, that is, people with money loan money, and then once they've loaned the money, they don't have the money to loan anymore. They have to then wait for income to come in until they've got more money to loan. They can't then take, you know, they can't do what they've been doing, which is then take the paper and fob it off to somebody else who doesn't know just how bad your process for coming up with a mortgage decision really is. Get the money from these guys who are left holding something worthless and loan it out again. And do the same thing over and over and over again and pile up that commission each time.
Right, because what you're running into here, Ben, is that line crossing event between the duty of the purchaser for value of caveat emptor, buyer beware, but there's a line you cross when the other side of the transaction is materially misrepresenting a fact critical to the transaction. And that's when because at that point there's even a recognition, you know, in the oldest of the English common law, there's a recognition that there are circumstances under which caveat emptor simply does not apply because the emptor can't caveat.
Right.
Or vice versa, right. Because everything is so deceptively misrepresented.
Yes, like you buy a box of peanut butter crackers in the store,
and you think it's not, and the label says it's peanut butter crackers.
Yeah, your duty of the peanut butter crackers is to make sure it's the right weight. They look like they're all the crackers in there, and it's a brand I've heard of. So I've now done my caveat emptor, and I walk home with it, and I get salmonella because something was hidden from me. Because I didn't know. Because you didn't.
Which you could not discover by reasonable inquiry.
Not a chance. And it's the same with these mortgages. They basically, by the time they've gone two hands away from the original, all of the details are lost. And as they change hands in repeated bank mergers and et cetera, the paperwork gets lost. And so, we've got banks that merge, and their computer systems are so incompatible that they've actually had to reconstruct balances from people's statements.
Yeah, like rebuilding a dinosaur from bones.
Exactly right.
And you know, it's so funny. I think this is pervasive. I don't want to keep you on too long or anything, but I think this is pervasive throughout the society, and I don't mean the U.S. society. I mean the global society, because look, oh, you knew I'd find a way to work religion into this. Look at the Roman Catholic Church.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a priest in Ireland who has a taste for little boys' backsides. And he gets caught. But instead of punishing the dirty priest, you move the dirty priest to a parish in Boston.
Yep.
Where he continues to indulge that same perverted taste, you know, for child abuse. And you catch him again. And instead of punishing him even after the second time, the Archdiocese of Boston moves him to, say, the Archdiocese of Wheeling, where he does it again.
Yep.
And yet you've got Bernard Ratzinger, who back when he was the head of the Inquisition, publishing a paper saying the way we deal with this is that we threaten the parents and the child with excommunication if they talk.
That's right.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. And I'm going to leave you with one thing, and this is the dark cloud on the horizon right now. The thing that, you know, you ask, how could it get worse? I've got people telling me that I've talked to who I believe know what they're talking about. That the entire wealth of the nation of Bahrain is vapor. And that they have their hooks in every single thing. And when they go down, it's going to be really bad.
And, well, wasn't it Bahrain that was buying up ports?
Buying up ports and everything else. And they're the ones with those amazing continent-shaped islands.
No, that's
tax haven villas.
That's Dubai.
For the rich.
That's Dubai.
Oh, Dubai. That's what I meant to say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, sorry. No, we were talking about the development there. I mixed those two up, and I shouldn't, and I know they're in totally different parts of the world, too. No, Dubai. Dubai is completely worthless at this moment. Because most of their value was not in oil, because they bought all these derivatives.
Yeah, their value was in, and you know, it's kind of sad because even though he is a despot within the classical language sense of the word, a tyrant, the guy who runs that place is fairly enlightened for the region.
Yeah, they won't kill you if a woman shows her ankle.
Yeah, but you know what? I ain't going nowhere. I can't have a beer in 110 degrees.
God no.
I mean,
no. And that's okay.
You're from Chicago. I mean, that comes with the turf there. You know, hot, you know, cold old style. There you go.
Oh, and the other thing, my contact told me about all that development there. That it all looks good in the aerial photographs, but most of it's not finished.
Oh, probably not.
It's a Potemkin village.
But man, that's two beauties I've gotten from you today. The Republican Party as classic Maoism and worldwide oligarchy, kleptocracy as a series of Potemkin villages.
Well, that's what it is. You know, there were, long ago, when I was a young man, the Soviet Union and global communism scared me to death. And I was certain that that the last thing I would see one day would be a bright flash. Because they were really capable of doing that. We were just very lucky it didn't happen.
We were very capable of doing that.
Yes. And I studied them. And I've talked to Soviet defectors. I've talked to ex-GRU agents. I've talked to a lot of people about what happened in the Soviet Union, both in the, you know, all the way from the 1930s, which is the oldest person I ever ran into and talked to about it, all the way up to, you know, all the way up to the early 1990s. You know, what happened there? How did it happen? What went on? How did it all fall apart? And, you know, what we are seeing here is basically what was happening there. There were a lot of, you know, whited sepulchers, okay? There were a lot of things there that looked good, that sounded good, that looked good in Soviet Life magazine, that were great when you heard about them when Izvestia wrote about them. But, they didn't really work. They didn't exist. They weren't real. And the people just got poorer and poorer and poorer on the backs of the ruling class who extracted every single thing they had. And the thing I learned, the first thing I really understood when I started really investigating it was that this had nothing to do with socialism and nothing to do with communism. It was basically there were a new set of czars, only they were thugs.
Yeah, new thugs, different day.
That's right. And nothing changed. And the same is really true in China. Nothing changed. It's just a different empire.
Well, the same thing's true here, Ben. You know, you get pirates rising from a different class. You know, the old planter class of old Virginia, not so prevalent anymore.
Nope.
Instead, you get Bill Gates.
Now, I will say that although I don't like Bill Gates, he's not quite on the same level as these guys.
No, he's not Bernie Madoff.
No, because he actually had a product. It's a crummy product, but he knew how to sell it. It kind of works.
Easy there. You'll hurt Peter Godbolt's feelings. You know, he and Bill are friends.
And I met Bill Gates back when he was writing software for the Altair in the 70s too.
I'm teasing. But no, the fact of the matter is I include Bill Gates in that as part of that paradigm, because early in the first few pages of David K. Johnston's seminal work, Perfectly Legal.
Mm-hmm.
He gives a brilliant and stunning example of how Bill and Melinda Gates worked it out so they stay stinking rich and never pay a penny in taxes. You've heard of the Bill and you remember the stunning news stories? Bill and Melinda Gates have formed a foundation and they've given all their money away.
Yep.
Not really.
Bill Gates' father says that's abhorrent, by the way, Bill Gates Sr. He's on record as saying that he's not taxed enough.
So, yeah, but I mean, and in fact, it was because of David K. Johnston's work, and of course he's been on the horn. It was because of his work that loophole eventually got closed. But there was this one New York tax lawyer who was tax lawyer to the multi-billionaires who had found this loophole. And of course, you don't tell anybody where the loophole is. You just, you know, they pay you to you know, pull it out a little looser. And Johnston finally found it and raised a stink about it, and it went away. But, you know, it's all you said class warfare, but I like your other term better. It's class piracy. Because warfare presumes the ability of each side. It presumes a certain, to use Pentagon terminology, symmetricality.
Oh, yeah. This is an asymmetrical war. However, understand that in an asymmetrical war, it is entirely possible for the insurgency to win. We are the insurgency, and we have to win.
Because the risks of not are devastating.
It's serfdom. If you want to be a serf, if you want to live in the hovel that's behind the Potemkin village, then do what you're doing now and do nothing. But what we got to do is we got to basically make our elected representatives understand in every way we can that what we want is confiscation. And then it's going to happen.
Well, see, that's like the argument I've been making for a couple of years about terrestrial radio. It's not, you know, it's not a problem with the program directors. We don't have a problem with little, you know, trollish right-wing station managers like the little fundamentalist I used to have to deal with. He's not the problem. The problem lies in the mass ownership of multiple licenses, and that's the stuff that has to be divested.
Oh, got to run. There's my pizza.
I hear the announcement, too.
Later. Bye.
Bye now. Ben Birch, dinner has arrived in Elgin, Illinois. And I just got an email in from our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest. You know, you guys have so much stuff that you can, that you bring to the program. I often don't get to a bunch of the emails that roll in. Cindy up in the Great Northwest says, quickly, because I'm cooking dinner, I offer this information. Don't be like me, Cindy, and run back and grab the skillet handle without the pot holder, okay? I'm notorious for that because I get in a hurry. It really hurts. She says, I studied contract law at UCLA School of Law. What your caller is referring to is this. If the bank trying to foreclose on your property does not present in court the original deed of trust and proof that they are in fact the legal holder of that deed, that trust deed, they can't foreclose. They're seen as no different than a credit card agency, just a creditor. The deeds have disappeared on millions of homes across our land. Bless those little pea-picking employees who are smarter than their masters. I hope that's true, but there are also rules within the rules of civil procedure for proving a copy. It can be done. But anyway, that's 2 hours of the program. It's 3 minutes past eight here on the East Coast. It is the last night of wide-open conversation radio before the weekend sets in, and there's great programming, just no actual live conversation until 9 o'clock Sunday night when John Fox comes around with All Foxed Up. That's 9 o'clock Eastern time, of course. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. Your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or, you know how this works, on your nickel, 304-658-3333. I had some music sent along by our buddy Reverbo. He says, it's finally Friday. This has not been a good week. Let me temper that, Reverbo says. This week has had its ups and downs, but humor is one of our only dependable defenses against the often cold, dark waters. That and, of course, music. He says, it's amazing considering how marginalized they are and how truly retarded their presentation continues to be that the Repiglicans are allowed so much squawk. They sure wouldn't if I was in charge. He says, but I digress. It's Friday, and I decided it's time once again for Possum Country's own Southern Culture on the Skids. I love this band. Today's selections come from their tasty 1992 release, For Lovers Only. He said he's been listening to a couple of tracks, Biscuit Eater and King of the Mountain, about 20 times each last night, and he just couldn't narrow it down to one, so he sent both. He said they're both so full of home-style, gravy-drenched reverb perfection, I couldn't do it, Bob. And you know how much I love the reverb. So I sent the pair. Might want to play one, or better yet, maybe both sometime during tonight's show. It's in your hands, or on your hands, as it were. He says, oh, and I probably don't need to mention that we've all noticed how well you can do that lower latitude character on the air. A little too well, if you know what I mean. If I didn't know you so well, I'd be worried about that. Well, Reverbo says, back to watching the stock market today. If it goes below 8, I have another buy order in. Buying high and selling low turned out to be a bad idea, bad investment model. I'm going to try Warren Buffett's strategy and do it the other way around. Because I got my eye on this peach-colored leisure suit, and they're not exactly giving it away. Not yet. I think my whole problem down here is I just haven't presented myself to the possum people in a majestic enough manner. My golly, if a peach-colored leisure suit ain't, if that's not majestic, I don't know what it is. Always put yourself forward. That's what my mom keeps telling me. And that comes from our critic at large, Reverbo. So we will take a break. Light them up if you want to. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. You know how this whole drill works. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is, in fact, the horn.
Yeah. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org. or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty. About 13 minutes past the hour, and we will go to the phones straight away. Just a quick email rolls in from our buddy Brandon up in Brooklyn. Brandon says, I just sent White Rose Society $40 on the Horn 60. Got a little extra this pay period, so I'm sending it on to you guys. I know it's not much, and I know you both appreciate it. I know how much it is. I know how much it is to you, and so does Ben Birch. And it is a bunch to us. Trust us. Brandon says, it is my hope that now that the pendulum has swung our way somewhat, people will begin to discover the horn as a source of facts and truth. Not political talking points, hate speech, or propaganda. They're starting to realize that Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann on MSNBC are sources they can look to for fact. Maybe, just maybe, they'll also begin to see that Air America Radio no longer has a monopoly on liberal talk. FYI, there is one terrestrial radio station that has a great liberal talk lineup. It's KTLK 1150 AM in Los Angeles. They combine programs from both Air America and Nova M, which should be the model for future mom-and-pop radio stations that want to provide liberal programming. This is in anticipation of Clear Channel's eventual demise. Wishful thinking, Brandon notes. On another note, an African-American chair of the RNC? Now that's funny. I'm doing the best I can for the chortling I know that Brandon is doing on his own. Take care, Brandon in Brooklyn. Thank you so much, Brandon, for the note and for the kind contribution and continued support of what we're trying to do here. And I know we carry on and give voice to our frustrations and so forth. I do it. Guy does it. Mark does it. John does it. Both Ricks do it, Rick Goodner and Rick Smith. But we do also salt in the facts. Because the facts are what matters. I could sit here and say, he's Bob Kincaid and he's come down from the mountain with the truth. Ha ha! BS on truth. Facts. You know, I try to delineate, and I know Guy does and everybody else, when we're talking about facts and when we're talking about opinion.
Because unlike Ronald Reagan, you know, it was that saint of the Republican Party, Ronald Reagan, who once said, well, facts are stupid things. And they are for Republicans. They just are. But enough of me. Let's go to the phones. Alan's been waiting a long time. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program. Sorry you had to wait.
Hey, Bob. It's okay to wait because it's nice listening to your interesting callers, and also it's nice to hear that your show is doing real good, I think. And it's about time for me to send a donation again.
Well, bless your heart. I worry, Alan. I don't want anybody putting themselves in a bad position. That's the most important thing.
Oh,
tough times, and I know it.
Yeah. Well, see, I was listening to a show the other day, and I think it said that your senator, Robert Byrd, wants to get a few $1 million into this stimulus plan to help coal.
Yeah, that's one of, you know, I saw that come across my email a couple of days ago, and it's just, you just sit there and you read it, and, well, you know, Agnes hears me from another room going, don't, are you all right, honey? And I tell her what happened, and then she makes the same noise. It's so frustrating. It is so very frustrating, Alan. Because that, you know, that's, In a state where the well-heeled complain about people getting food stamps and call them welfare queens, they're the biggest welfare queens of all.
That's right.
You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think solar energy can compete with coal now, from what I hear.
That technology is going forward. Coal technology, by its very nature, will always go backwards.
Yeah, and the only reason why it's up there is because we're subsidizing it, I would imagine.
Well, yeah, we already subsidize it. And they want to give more welfare to the coal industry? You know, when was the last time Robert Byrd came out and said, let's really jack up the unemployment compensation and let's really jack up the food stamps? I think the answer to that is never.
Well, we got to get rid of those blue dog Democrats. I really think we do.
Well, that one from Tennessee that put the shiv to Obama 2 days ago, that sucker's not much better than a Republican in my book. Tennessee's 5th District. Oh, yeah. He demanded things from Obama, and Obama gave them up, and then he turned around and voted against the stimulus package. Man, that's snaky, Alan.
Oh, shoot. Hey, did you get my photos from that I sent you of the TVA plant in Tennessee?
Yes, I did, and I wonder how you know. I mean, those are like real secret squirrel pictures. How'd you manage that?
Well, I had a delivery there.
Did you really?
Yeah. I picked it up in Chicago and took it there, and I had to drive all through that bad weather. I drove from between Chicago and about 50 miles south of Louisville, Kentucky. I couldn't even see the lines on the road, and my top speed was probably about 45 miles an hour.
If you can do 45 in those conditions, you are a far braver man than I, Alan.
Oh, we're crazy.
Well, but the load's got to get there, doesn't it?
I know. They act like it did. So there was other vehicles out there, so I just took my time, and some Rambo drivers went past me pretty fast. I didn't try to keep up with them. Sometimes I find them in the ditch, and I just kept on going. So I guess that's the way you do it, just slow and easy.
Yeah, and just wait for spring. And then you're because by then you're only dodging tornadoes.
And all this is from global climate threat change, I do believe. We've always had some of it, but so much of it now. What's causing enough, I'm sure, from what the scientists are saying.
Yeah, I tend to trust the scientists more. I tend to think the scientists are into knowing things as opposed to these right wingers who are into believing them.
I know it.
and Miss Lula's still traveling along nicely?
Oh, yeah. Tomorrow I'm going to take her to a state park, and she doesn't know it yet, but we're going to have a good time. I love that.
Yeah, she'll. Whereabouts are you now?
I'm in Arkansas.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, she'll enjoy the ramble, and I saw one of her ears in one of the photos, so I knew she was with you.
Hey, T Boone Pickens, he put off his windmills for 2 years, putting up new windmills. I wonder why 2 years. What's the significance of 2 years?
The only thing I can think is 2 years till the next congressional elections. But I guess that marks me as a very cynical man, Alan.
Yeah, and he also says that oil prices are going to go back up. So I guess when he thinks Republicans are going to get back in office, that they're going to bring the oil prices up. So that's the two and two I put together.
Well, that's true too. That is very true. Nothing like we put two oil men in the White House and the vice president. Well, we didn't. They didn't get elected, but we wound up with them. And, the oil guys, lo and behold, look what happened to oil prices. I mean, not saying there's cause and effect or anything, but it's kind of hard to avoid the obvious conclusion.
I know it. Oil men in the White House and the oil prices that were higher than they've ever been. Have you ever heard of this man called David Corton?
Corton?
Writes about the economy.
I can't place his name right offhand, but I see a bunch as I go along.
I was listening to him the other day on Democracy Now. It sounded like he was saying that the whole stock market stuff is just a big ripoff, gamble, whatever. Our whole system needs to be changed.
Well, if you heard the conversation,
right.
If you heard the conversation I was having with Ben, you know that there's a lot of fraud in it. It can be regulated and it can be cleaned up to a certain degree, but some of it has its underpinnings, actual fraud. I mean, how can you call Bernie Madoff anything but overt fraud?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure who he is.
No, that's the guy who set up the multi-billion-dollar Ponzi scheme that was going down back in December. Yeah. Loads of people got ripped off.
I was listening to the Diane Rehm show the other day, and I listened to probably 30 minutes of it the other day, and they were talking about the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And they had one guy there from the American Enterprise Institute.
Oh, dear.
And they were, like, debating about the tax cuts to help the economy and things like that. And nobody talked about unions and higher wages would help the economy. Nobody talked about sensible things. Finally, I just turned it off and went to something else.
Well, I mean, anytime you hear that American Enterprise Institute, you know that you're hearing a bunch of uber right-wing cut the, let's just not make the rich pay taxes and America will be, a fabulous wonder. That's all they do. I mean, there's really no thinking that goes into it. But there's certainly nothing to listen to there. And, Diane Rehm does a fairly good job, but it's this idea of continuing to give people a forum who had 20 of the last 28 years to prove themselves correct and were proven nothing but abjectly wrong, and then to keep treating them like they know anything, Alan. That's what drives me nuts.
Mm-hmm. I know it. And also, I was just looking at an article on Common Dream saying that when it comes to Democrats compared to Republicans on these TV shows, they still have Republicans 2-1 over Democrats. On
exactly. That's
shows.
Yeah. That's some work that was put out there. Great work by Media Matters, and that that's another thing that hasn't changed. What we're still seeing is that for every time. A sane, progressive, or liberal idea is put forward, there is a cacophony of insanity to drown it out. And it doesn't look to be changing anytime soon.
Yeah, they try to make these right-wingers look so important, like they know what they're talking about. I don't think they do. Then I heard somebody from Harvard University the other day on BBC saying that if we subsidize our steel industry, it would just help. It'll just encourage steel being made in a way that's not very economical or whatever. But he didn't say anything about our employees here making more money, and that would help the economy. They wouldn't talk about sensible things like that.
No, not by a long shot. It's you know, and it's not limited to that. I heard some of the same kind of stuff listening to NPR when I had to run to the store before the program started. Because I think at the bottom of all of this is just a mordant fear, Alan, that ordinary working people might get a slice of the pie under this planning. And that drives the big money fraud outfits absolutely crazy, because their whole scheme is based on taking money from people, not giving money to people.
It's against their philosophy. I used to work for this man who was what you would call old wealth. He's like a descendant of the people who started the steel mills in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
And it was back in the early 90s, back in the time when everybody was saying tax cut. I mean, no tax raise, no raising of taxes to help school systems. They're saying that all over the state of Alabama. But, you know, Mountain Brook, Alabama, the wealthiest community in Alabama.
Yes.
They voted to raise the taxes on education. And next time I saw that man, I said, you know, I congratulated him. I said, that's a good thing for your community. And, oh, man, he just like. Wanted to tear me up.
He got purple in the face, did he?
Yeah, he said, oh, I sent my kids to private school. I don't believe in helping, you know, my money going to educate other people. See, that's about the last I ever talked about politics with him. But that's a good example.
And the funny thing is, it doesn't have to be old money saying that kind of craziness, Alan. You can hear that all over the South.
Yep.
And it's stunning because the South, to the extent that there is a new South, the South was raised up out of desperation by nothing but public education and public works. But nobody wants to remember that nobody wants to think of it because nobody had it explained to them. You know, where I came from in Alabama, you've been through the Shoals area. That place was made to exist by virtue of public works.
Yeah.
And, you know, but try to get some conservative to acknowledge that. Ain't not happening.
Well, one of the things I get to do now that I drive a van instead of a tractor-trailer truck is on the weekends when I have time off, I don't have a load, I could go to a state park or a national park, or usually just state parks, or I could see these dams. I went to a dam in Tennessee not far from Florence, and I can see public works all over the place from back in the 40s, and it's just beautiful.
And the 30s, and exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, you know, where I come from had a terrible yellow fever problem year in and year out until there was some flood control. So,
yeah.
But, you know, try to explain that to a Republican now. I guess, you know, yellow fever is a function of capitalism. I hate them, Alan. They drive me absolutely bananas. But you stay safe and... Go ahead.
You were talking about the peanut factory earlier. You were talking about the salmonella and peanuts. I found out that the biggest processing plant in Georgia was last inspected in 2001. Guess what happened then? That's when George Bush started his war against...
Yeah, war on anything sane. Right.
War against regulation. I guess I better let you get to the next caller. I enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, I always do, Alan. You stay safe and enjoy the enjoy whatever downtime you can get.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Take care now. Bye now.
Bye.
From the road and this time in Arkansas, that's our buddy Alan the trucker. And we will keep things rolling on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Cassie.
Hey, Cassie. How are you?
Good.
Are we on the speaker? Are we on the speakerphone?
No.
Oh, okay. Just checking. No, you were kind of far away there. That's fine.
Is this better?
Much better.
It's a little phone.
Oh.
It's not as big as my face.
Well, glad to hear from you. What's on your mind this evening?
I wanted to talk to you about the Senate.
Okay.
Do you think if the House passed, first of all, did you hear about what happened with the CHIP program, the S-CHIP program?
It passed the House. I know that.
Right. Passed the House, but do you know why the Republicans aren't voting for it?
Why?
Because it's ensuring, it's going to offer insurance to immigrants.
There's that, and they also claim it will insure people, and this, you know, this goes back, you know, Bush vetoed that thing twice, Cassie. And their claim was always, not only the immigrants, because they always got to work some racism and classism into anything they do, but it also, they claim that it provides insurance to people who ought to be paying for it out of their own pocket. And it's cheating the insurance companies out of profits. Pardon?
Nobody can afford to pay insurance.
Right. But, you know, because the thresholds were raised for availability, they feel like the poor little bedraggled insurance companies that are just scraping along aren't getting their fair share.
So, okay, with the SCHIP, do the insurance companies not make money? Is that what's really going on? Is that the state takes care of it and then the insurance companies... So, like, does the money for SCHIP, does it pay for insurance or does it pay for medical care?
It is a coverage program that pays for coverage for children, not necessarily via private insurance, and that's what's got the right wing so in a tizzy.
That's why they don't like it.
Right, because they're not, because, see, in the Republican view of things, Cassie, every event that transpires under the sun, and I'm not being sarcastic here, Republicans view every event that transpires under the sun, whether it be good or bad, tragic or joyous, human or inhumane, every event from the sprouting of a seed to you name it, is a profit event. In other words,
but not a tax event.
But not, I can't get anything past you, but not ever a tax event.
Oh, I bet they like taxes on little people.
Well, you know, regressive taxes, taxes that poor people pay more of as a percentage of their total income than rich people do, yeah, those are okay. You know, fuel taxes. The cigarette taxes to pay for SCHIP, you know, they don't like that either. They're big tobacco lobby buddies.
They're not going to take money from them unless they're heavy smokers.
Well, you know,
it doesn't even cost them.
Well, and that's the thing. Like my mom, who quit smoking in 1972, used to say when they bring these things up, well, I suppose I need to start smoking again so I can be a patriotic American. I mean, that's the sort of craziness of these kind of funding schemes. And that's the only question I have with something like SCHIP. Why can't all of America pay for it? Why can't the rich pay for it? You know, cigarette smoking is something that is predominantly done by the middle and lower classes.
Is it?
Yes.
Except in old movies.
Pardon?
Except in old movies.
Well, because back in old movies, everybody did it. I mean, you can't imagine a world, but I've seen it back when I was young, where, you know, there were ashtrays and butt buckets and stuff inside grocery stores, and you'd see a housewife or a dad or whatever just cruising down the aisles with a butt lit. It's almost unimaginable to me. But that used to be a very, you know. Stores used to have spittoons in them too. Ew. But you know the Republicans are also controlled by the tobacco lobby, and the tobacco lobby just hates this. So you know, as somebody who is a nicotine addict, I can at least say that I'm willing to do this. I just wish that we could get all patriotic about it and let every American pay for children's health care because. You know, not to get all smarmy or anything, but I'm on board with that the Whitney Houston tune about, you know, I believe the children are a future, blah, 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 because the kids really are the future. And either we take care of our future altogether, or we just look at the cigarette smokers and say, Dad, that's your job. Just a minute while I go out and pump more fumes into the air with I'm a non-smoker, but I got to go and get in my Hummer and drive 450 feet because I'm too lazy to walk. and pump some stuff into the air that way.
Do you think John Fox is right to say that if pot was legal and then they could tax pot, that would help the economy?
Sure it would. Illicit cannabis production in the United States is probably, if you could actually get your hands on real meaningful data, one of the most significant cash crops in this country. It just is. Not advocating for its use or against its use, but it just is.
Okay.
Moreover, though, more than the cannabis for recreational use, the other thing that's really, really important and is being tried in some states and is not crazy is the return of industrial hemp. And hemp and cannabis are...
That's what they used for ropes and clothes?
Rope and oils and, I mean, you can make clothing out of it. You can make paper out of it. It's a weed. It will grow anywhere in the United States. And, in fact, I've mentioned this on the air before, but if you will go and do a web search for something called Rattle and Snap, you will see an old antebellum southern mansion in south central Tennessee. And that was the name of the mansion, Rattle and Snap. And that was part of a massive plantation complex. They didn't grow cotton. They grew hemp. They grew vast amounts of hemp. The hemp that went into the ropes of the United States Navy's fledgling fleet. A lot of it came from Rattle and Snap. And it's the ultimate in renewable crops. You're not using petroleum products to make, for instance, nylon rope, because you're making the rope out of hemp. And then when the rope is no good anymore, it biodegrades. So it would make some sense. You know, you can make biodiesel out of it.
So does that mean it's the oil lobby that doesn't want it?
Oh, gosh, yes. A big part of the criminalization of marijuana back in the first part of the 20th century had nothing to do with it being used as a drug, but the fact that it was getting in the way of the profit event as contemplated by the oil trusts. And I know that may sound a little conspiracy theory and a little paranoid, but it really is true. I don't mean to overstate it. I hope I'm not overstating it, Cassie. But if you are a so-called conservative, if you are a member of the Republican Party, then you believe that there is not anything that happens under the sun that you don't have a God-given right to make a buck off of. Imagine that for just a minute. Imagine a child who desperately needs a heart transplant. Well, the conservatives and the Republican Party believe that if that child cannot provide an opportunity for some insurance company and hospital and doctor to make an overt profit, then that infant needs to die.
Especially if it's a black
infant. Or any shade of brown.
Okay, but the other thing I wanted to ask you about in the Senate was, do you think that the stimulus plan, since the Republicans didn't vote for it in the House, should the Democrats in the Senate change it so that it adds back all of the stuff that the Republicans in the House made them take away?
There has been some talk of that, Cassie. I don't see it doing any harm. I am in favor of low-cost contraception being available to women of working class means, and poor means. I'm also in favor of taking care of our national infrastructure, part of which is, among other things, the National Mall in D.C. So sure, put it back. However, I'm glad you asked this question because there is a larger issue at stake here. And that is this. There is evidence as of this evening that not only are the last night we had Jim DeMint from South Carolina announcing that he wouldn't be surprised if not a single Republican voted for the stimulus package in the Senate. Well, that'll be enough to keep it from even getting to a full up or down vote, because that'll mean it can't beat cloture, which means it's effectively filibustered. But
then Harry Reid should just do the nuclear thing.
Yeah. But the thing is, Harry Reid's not even in a place where he can threaten the nuclear option, because Harry Reid doesn't even have the Democrats on board. Ben Nelson, and I've mentioned his name a lot lately. Ben Nelson is a senator from Nebraska. He calls himself a Democrat. Ben Nelson says he's undecided on whether he would support the stimulus bill in the Senate. A Democrat. Harry Reid doesn't even have his own Democratic House in order. And then there's Kent Conrad, another Democrat from North Dakota, and he says, I'd have a very hard time voting for what came over from the House.
Doesn't that mean that Harry Reid isn't a good leader?
Yes, it does mean that.
He gets them to stay in their own party and vote.
It means precisely that. Now, let me back up just a minute and let you know a little bit more about Ben Nelson from Nebraska, because this, I know what your age is, and I know what I know where you're headed in your future. Everybody on the horn is rooting for you and really want to see you do a lot with the talents and the intelligence that you're working to develop, Cassie. And there's a strong chance that when you go to college, something called a Pell Grant might be part of your future. A Pell Grant is money that is granted, not loaned, but granted to college students to help them complete their education and pay for tuition and such. Well, Ben Nelson of Nebraska is undecided about the stimulus bill because he opposes $13 billion going into Pell Grants to help students pay for college instead of going and hock up to their nostrils in student loans.
Okay, I'm going to guess here. Is Nebraska one of the states that has the banks that make a lot of money giving loans instead of grants?
No. No, it's not.
I thought I got this. I thought that was going to be the answer.
So how come he
doesn't want it?
Because he is a so-called conservative Democrat. He had, you got to understand that Nebraska has been until fairly recently a red state. Okay? And Ben Nelson wanted to be a senator from the state of Nebraska, but he did not want to run as a Republican. In fact, he'd been governor of Nebraska as a Democrat, but he didn't want anything to do with it I guess you can tell a difference between Ben Nelson and a Republican in Nebraska, because the Republicans in Nebraska are even weirder. But he was running in Democratic primaries because it made it much easier for him to get to the general election. So he wins the Senate, he wins running for governor, and he later wins running for Senate. But then he goes into the Senate, and he is less likely to vote for Democratic legislation than some Republicans are. And that's the terrifying part, and that's why I said I was glad that you brought this issue up, Cassie. There is nothing that is important that we have coming up in the United States Senate in which Harry Reid can even get every Democratic member of the Senate to vote for. See, once Al Franken gets seated, Harry has at his disposal, at least theoretically, 59 votes, right?
And Ted Kennedy has to fly back for when there's an appointment.
Right. But so all things being equal, theoretically, Harry Reid has 59 votes in the United States Senate. If he has all his ducks in a row. That means he only has to convince two Republicans, who are usually thought of as being Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins from Maine, to vote with him, and he can beat back any filibuster.
Or he can get one of the Dems that people listen to convince.
Right. But the thing is, he can't. Because he can't even control the 59, that 59 number that he supposedly has. And the import for this, Cassie, is so broad and so deep as to be almost unfathomable. Because this is health care. This is employee free choice. This is stimulus. This is everything that we need. This is these are constitutional issues of habeas corpus and domestic wiretapping. Anything that we want to do to restore the Constitution. Harry Reid has to have every Democratic vote plus two Republicans. And he can't even get all his Democrats.
Is it true that he got the unanimous vote to stay Speaker?
Yes.
Not Speaker, Leader.
I believe it was unanimous.
That's really disturbing.
But, you know, if it's not unanimous, then, I mean, it's kind of dictatorial. Because, you know, you don't want to get your plum chairmanship taken away from you in the Senate. You don't want to be sent to the back benches. So, you know, to that extent, you'll support Harry. But when it comes to actually doing things for the American people, well, it's
59 of them to vote for him, or 58 of them, because Franklin wasn't there. So you can get 58 of them to vote for him, but he can't get 58 of them to vote for the future of children or for safe bridges.
That's about the size of it. I don't think anybody ran against him. I didn't see any campaigns out in that regard. But do you understand, and I'm not trying to talk down to you again. Do you understand why I have profound misgivings about anything happening out of the Senate?
Yeah. They need to make sure that some of the Republicans get the floor.
Well, yeah. Anything that winds up with less than 40. Because everything that happens in the Senate has to get past a cloture vote. Otherwise, it's deemed filibustered. And it only takes 40. And the other disturbing thing is that, just like he did the last time the nuclear option was mentioned, if that's brought up again, then I can count on my senator, Robert Byrd, to go and make some sort of a mugwump deal with a bunch of Republicans to protect their right to stop anything good happening for America. Because of Robert Byrd's esteem for the rules of the Senate. Kind of disturbing, isn't it?
Very. Okay. Well, thank you. Okay, before I go.
Yes?
I want to say something about White Rose Society.
Yes.
Which is, if I can send them $10 and I don't have a job, then everybody can send him $10 and can send you $10.
Thank you, Cassie. Thank you very
everybody
much.
$10.
Bless your heart. And I know that Ben appreciated it. Because, frankly, it was a big shortfall and it had to be made up. And I'm really proud of the way people responded. It was you and Brandon and a lot of others who made sure that Ben can pay the server bill this month. So thank you. How are classes going? You know, that is our job. We've got that job here too. Everybody wants to know you're doing okay.
I'm doing great. My classes are going really well. Everything except chemistry, which is going to pick up when we get to test instead of notebook.
Pass what?
Chemistry. I'm not doing as well.
I know, but what is it in chemistry that's getting you hung up?
My lab book.
Okay. So it's not like you just can't get your mind around Boyle's gas laws or anything.
No, that's what I said. I'll do well when we get to test instead of the lab book. But yep. Right now I'm doing as well. But I'm doing really well in everything else. And even though I, as you know, but I don't think a lot of people know, had to move twice inside of 3 weeks, and everything's going well with my living situation, and everything's going well with school, and things are pretty good.
Wonderful. Well, we're all rooting for you, and we're awfully proud of everything that you accomplish. Cassie, I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, you too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. calling from a liberal oasis in Texas, that is Cassie, who can also be found, her musings, ponderings, and writings, and I will not mess this up, at FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com. FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com. The blog is called Political Teen Tidbits. And you know what? She may be a political teen, but she writes a lot of really grown-up stuff. And I'm just the proudest punch of her. Not to put too fine a point on things, but I said this stuff a couple of days ago, and it's coming true before my very eyes, and it scares the bejabbers out of me. You know, I started the program talking about how it takes $20,000 a day to produce All Things Considered on NPR. Well, last night on NPR, Senator Charles Grassley, Repiglican of Iowa, was asked about a Republican filibuster of the stimulus package. Let's see if I can get you the answer in Charles Grassley's own words.
By the way, Senator, we always just assume that anything in the Senate requires 60 votes because there'll be a filibuster threat. Is that right? Does this bill need 60 votes to pass?
Yes.
It does.
Yeah.
Why? Why couldn't something ever pass without a threat of a filibuster?
Well, listen, not every bill that comes up has a threat of a filibuster. It's always a possibility. But most legislation goes through without the worry about 60 votes.
They're going to filibuster it. And Harry won't stop them. But it's not just Charles Grassley. And, you know, Charles Grassley says this kind of stuff for a reason, because he's a right-wing Republican. I mean, I remember when he was the excuse-maker-in-chief for Ronald Reagan and the whole filthy Iran-Contra crowd. North and Poindexter and McFarlane and Gorbanifar and the Calero, the whole stinking murderous crowd. And he was an excuse maker in chief. And he's got to do this because he is in the deep and smelly with the evangelical right. Because they're mad at him for trying to look into the finances of Joyce Myers and Creflo Dollar, of Kenneth Copeland. You know, for the fraud that the right wing evangelical religion industry engages in. Tax-free fraud at that. But it's not just him. Oh, no. There's also that senator whose office I walked past last week and looked over to Guy James. We just walked past Richard Shelby's office, and I said, waste of space, kind of in one of those audible whispers. Waste of space. And then down a little bit further on the left-hand side of the hallway, there was the Senate office of Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama. This is the guy, just to remind you, who will go down in history as having said publicly, you know, I used to think the Klan was kind of cool till I found out they smoked the marijuana. No, really. And he was asked. And he said to CNS News, I think it's going to take 60 votes to pass the bill. Whatever we can do, whether offering amendments, whether voting again the bill because it could not be amended, or whatever parliamentary possibilities are in front of us. Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong crazy right-winger. This is Senator John Kyle telling CNS News. Whatever we can do, whether offering amendments, whether voting against the bill because it could not be amended, or whatever parliamentary possibilities are in front of us, we will explore because this isn't about playing the game. What? It's precisely about playing the game. And then there is Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma, one of the most insane men in that body. And he said, I'd be a part of it. Asking if he would filibuster the bill. It's the end of the week. It is a week in which we have learned of a 93-year-old man freezing to death in Michigan. It is a week in which we have learned of a family of seven dead in a suicide pact in Los Angeles, of men robbing $100 from a bank, a man who was then subsequently sentenced to decades in prison. And Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma is itching to filibuster anything that can help make this country get well. Do you understand now? Do you have a fully functioning, working understanding of the ill that the Republican Party means for America? This is serious business. And instead of having an admiral at the helm, it would appear we have a cast member from the Pirates of Penzance in Harry Reid. Don't think this bill is going to pass the Senate. It won't. And Harry Reid will let the minority stop America's hope in its tracks. Thank you for your kind participation this evening. Thank you for your kind contributions. We do so very much appreciate it. Thanks for the contributions that have rolled in this evening during the conversation. That is that, and the sponsorship of Coal River Mountain Watch are the only ways that this operation stays on the air. That's all. And with us traveling next week, we need all the help we can get, and thanks for the help that has already been sent. Very much. Thanks, too, to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster extraordinaire. Go look at the new headonradionetwork.com main page. It's beautiful. Ben Birch, who you heard from this evening, you helped him out in a big way last night, and thank you so much, because you made it possible for the Horn Stream to keep going out. I can sit here talking behind this microphone until I turn blue in the face, but if it doesn't get to Ben's servers, it don't happen for you. Thank you sincerely to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Going to be happy to be hanging out with some Coal River Mountain Watch folks and a lot of other committed activists next week. Hopefully we'll have some of them for you to talk to. Or for you to listen to them talk. It all depends on how the technology shakes out. Truly, Coal River Mountain Watch fights upstream because we are all downstream. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk.